This is Bernie and Sid in the morning. The new morning show. Great guests, great stories, great moments.
Bernard has been a friend of mine for so long, and Sid, you too.
Making mischief every morning.
Well, you're going to get me in a lot of trouble.
On the air, on the app, on the web.
Now on Echo devices.
This is an honor. Great show.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Do it live!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
I do believe in meetings. I believe that having a meeting with Chairman Kim was a good thing. I think having meetings with the President of China was a very good thing. I believe it's really good. So having meetings with Russia, China, North Korea, I believe in it. Nothing bad's going to come out of it, and maybe some good will come out.
One of those officers was Officer Michael Chesna. He saw the suspect actively vandalizing a home. He exited his vehicle, he drew his firearm and commanded this man to stop. This suspect was eventually identified as Emmanuel Lopes. Lopes then attacked Officer Chesna, it is believed, with a large stone, striking him in the head, and Officer Chesna fell to the ground. Lopes then retrieved Officer Chesna's firearm and discharged it several times in his head and chest.
This is the body cam video released by Chicago police this afternoon showing the fatal police shooting of 37-year-old Harith Augustus. Officers on foot patrol approached the man at 71st and Jeffrey yesterday afternoon after they say they spotted what they believe to be a gun under his shirt. As he runs away, an officer pulls out his weapon and Augustus reaches towards his side. Right after that, shots are fired.
You know, these things happen in a split second, and officers have to make decisions quickly. They don't have the luxury of looking at video later.
Oh, and there it is now. Ruth Carver tumbles to the center court. Not an eighth for Williams, but a first title for Angelique Carver. Russia, France, and FIFA there. Zimbabwe is going to be on the run on this quick long ball. Ivan Šinić there to defend. Mbappe running in. Mbappe cutting the byline. Now the cross. Griezmann, can he pick it up? His back's to goal. How about Pogba through traffic? Second chance for Pogba! In for Kylian Mbappe now. Mbappe! A last look at the watch from referee Nestor Pitana. A final whistle. France have won the World Cup.
Vive la France! Vive les Bleus!
The French are champions today. So I guess Macron must be feeling pretty good about himself this morning. But like I tweeted yesterday, congratulations to France, but we're still not going to pay your effing bill. So it's the end of that. You may be soccer champions, but we are still not paying your effing bills.
Oh, no. President Trump was like Robert De Niro in Brussels, Tamori and Goodfellas.
That's right.
F you, pay me.
Pay me.
So they will pay.
They will pay, and they do get the win. That was a very exciting day. Great game. They go on to beat Croatia 4-2.
You say great game. I've been around a while.
Yeah.
That's got to be the best World Cup I've ever seen.
Well, I can't make that statement because, and I'm not sure you can either, because I'm not sure how much time either one of us spent watching the entirety of the World Cup in the past. So for me, I'm going to tell you it's the best I've ever seen because it's the first time in my life I dove in headfirst and watched just about every single game. Didn't like soccer before, but after this, soccer now has a fan in Sid Rosenberg.
I must confess, it is the only one I've ever seen. That's
right.
True.
But they've got you now, right? They've hooked you.
Well, look, it was exciting Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've hooked me, but it was good.
Well, I mean, look, you're not going to start watching MLS.
It was the highest scoring game since 1968, first of all.
And by the way, most people thought it would be a low scoring game. The favorite was the under 2 goals, and they end up scoring 6. and they scored often and early. That game was 2-1 at the half. To just emphasize your point.
I enjoyed seeing Pussy Riot on the field in the second half, or whatever the hell they call that.
That's what they call that.
Yeah, that was fun. And now we have a new star. He's a household word, Mbappe.
Mbappe. He's a household name.
He is a household name. And it happened to coincide yesterday. As you know, Sydney, it was Bastille Day.
Well, Saturday was Bastille Day.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, and I know that because, of course...
June 14th.
Yeah. My place, Café du Soleil, which is around the corner from my apartment, had bands performing all day long outside on Saturday for Bastille Day.
July, that's right.
That's right. And then Sunday, of course, was the World Cup. So they had 2 days of celebrations in France. They're still celebrating this morning. Yeah, it was an amazing weekend.
They're making the Detroit riots look like...
I know.
You know, just looked like an organized march.
A lot of the guys that were there on Saturday for Bastille Day at this bar on the Upper West Side never left. They literally stayed through Saturday night, woke up Sunday morning, had some eggs and champagne, and got ready for World Cup soccer. And it was an amazing scene.
That's how you do it, man.
Yeah. Well, yesterday morning was great. We're going to get to Putin. He just arrived in Finland and the big meeting, not summit, but meeting coming up with President Trump momentarily. But I know for me, I woke up yesterday... And most days in the United States, it's about football, especially Sunday, right? Football or baseball, Yankees, Indians, Mets and Nationals, or basketball. But for me, I woke up yesterday morning, it was tennis and soccer. I don't remember the last time I woke up as a sports fan that excited about a day of tennis and soccer. But between Wimbledon, which was a blowout, and the World Cup, it was a very exciting sports day.
It's a good thing you live in the Upper West Side because you're becoming a Europhile. That's the Europhiles two games right there.
Well, I've always loved tennis. I never missed Wimbledon. But, yes, the soccer thing is brand new. But I was disappointed with both because I wanted Croatia to beat France. And even though I knew it was never going to happen in a million years, I really wanted the South African Kevin Anderson to beat the Serbian Djokovic. And that wasn't even close.
Anderson, was he from Russia? I know the letter.
South Africa.
Oh, that's it. The letter said RSA.
Yeah, South Africa.
And for the 2 minutes that I tuned in, I thought, what is that? Is that Russia? And then I just never checked.
You know, listen, by the way, I'm always complaining about the three-man booth in sports. I know SNY does it very well with Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling for the Mets. But usually the three-man booth outside of Gifford, Cosell, and Michaels, Monday Night Football, whoever it may have been, Gifford, Don Meredith, excuse me. Usually the three-man booth stinks, but the three-man booth of Chris Fowler, Patrick McEnroe, and John McEnroe in London yesterday, that is a great telecast.
Yeah, that's top-notch.
Yeah, great.
That's a grand slam right there. See what I did?
See what you did. Yeah, the kid Anderson played like 18 hours against Roger Federer on Thursday or Friday. Thursday was Federer. Then he played like 19 hours against John Isner on Friday. But then Djokovic
He played a forever. Six-hour game.
The longest one ever.
Yeah.
But then Djokovic, a match for the ages, his match against Nadal on Saturday, I watched all of it, was one of the most amazing matches you'll ever see. So both guys, Bernie, had played a lot of hours, a lot of tennis leading up to Sunday, but clearly... After the injury and the questions about Djokovic, he's all the way back. That's his fourth Wimbledon title.
He's a nice kid. Where's he from? Serbia.
Yeah. But we like Croatia. You can't like them both, can you?
Well, you can like Serbia. Yeah, they're Orthodox people. I mean, you know, if it wasn't our war, we can like them, sure. What the hell?
We like them both.
Yeah. Okay. It's not like they were Bosnians.
No, that's true.
That's where the Muslims are.
That's true. Right. Right.
I got that wrong. It was. I thought the Croatians were fighting the... No, they had a little disagreement for a few years, and it's all settled now. A
couple thousand people died, but it's all good now.
It was a very brutal conflict.
Oh, my God. It was brutal. Terrible. So, listen, we'll get to the baseball, of course. We've got the home run hitting contest tonight.
I watched all the baseball. Baseball was a very exciting weekend.
It was, yes.
The Yankees were, you know, I mean, even though they won Saturday night, it was still a great game. The sixth inning, they kicked out of Aaron Boone.
That was good.
CC Sabathia, bottom of the sixth, he left pissed off. He tied game, so he didn't get the win. But, no, it was pretty good. And then
but they needed to win yesterday. Look, the fact is, the Yankees have won like 100 games.
They lost 2 out of 3.
And they're now 4.5 back of the Red Sox. 4.5 is not, that's a lot.
Right.
So, you got the trade deadline coming up the end of the month. Tonight's the home run hitting contest.
It doesn't make me, shed any tears.
I understand.
But it was still exciting.
Yesterday was kind of boring. The Yankees jumped out to a 2-0 lead.
Didn't watch that one.
They tied it at 2, and they eventually lost 5-2. But here's your story with the Yanks. Again, tonight, home run hitting contest. Tomorrow, All-Star game. No Yankee baseball Wednesday and Thursday. They come back on Friday hosting the Mets. So you get the Subway Series when baseball resumes this weekend. But again, 4.5 back of the Red Sox, trade deadline July 31st. All the rumors about Manny Machado from the Orioles, all these pitchers out there. What I'm trying to tell you is the Yankees are going to look a heck of a lot different in about 10 days, believe it or not, than they look today, even though they've got the second most wins in baseball.
Let me just do this for our friend Joseph Abboud. The Red Sox are just formidable.
They are.
Xander Bogaerts, a walk-off grand slam.
Yes.
He's almost tied for the most grand slam home runs for Boston, which is Babe Ruth.
Is it Babe Ruth? Is it still Babe Ruth? Yeah.
Still Babe Ruth.
Rice broke that. Well, there you go. Bogaerts, great player. Mookie Betts leads the league in hitting. 359.
That's right.
That's your guy. You love Mookie?
I love Mookie.
I know you do. So all that is out there.
I always ask myself, what would Mookie do? And that's how I live my life.
I got it.
It's guiding principle. What would Mookie do?
We're actually going to talk to C.J. Nitkowski, local guy, pitched at St. John's, played on the Mets and the Yankees. Now he's a big-time broadcaster. He does games for Fox on a national level, does 100 games for the Texas Rangers, and does a baseball show every morning on XM Sirius. So he'll join us, talk about the second half of the season, the trades, the All-Star game. But again, the biggest news of the morning is what's going on right now in Helsinki, Finland, Bernard, where moments ago, after hosting the World Cup, leaving Moscow, Vladimir Putin arrived in Helsinki.
Showed up a little bit late, fashionably late. Let Trump cool his heels a little bit. He's a beady-eyed little sneak. Let's not sugarcoat it. Yeah, he's a little sneaky.
They did show him a couple times yesterday during the soccer game,
but
laughing with somebody, having a great time. I don't know who the other guy was, but he was having a great time.
But his whole deal is, his whole deal is just like Trump always says about all these leaders, is to take care, make their own country better, and that's his only interest. And the hell with everybody else. So, and that's now our president's interest. And we'll see what happens in this meeting. The fact that Trump is meeting with the guy is no big deal. It's not like, oh my God, they're gonna start rigging the elections in November now. No, every president has met with the leader of Russia/Soviet Union since FDR met with Stalin. Stalin, who was as bad as Hitler as far as murdering people. So this is a fairly routine, and if it reduces tensions, so be it. If not, well, then it doesn't.
I got no issue with it.
Let's give it a shot.
Yeah,
he said, meeting with North Korea, with China, with Russia may not look palatable for some Americans, especially Democrats. But look, I don't even know why they're meeting. But what they're talking about in this meeting, and no one does, by the way. What are they even talking about?
They're going to talk about the meddling. They're going to talk about the nuclear treaty. We have a nuclear treaty with them organized. It was written up during Obama's administration, 2010. It expires in 2021.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
And between the United States and Russia, we, the two of us, have 90% of the world's nukes. So it's good that we're talking. Then we're going to talk about the expansion in Syria.
Right.
We're going to talk about the Ukraine.
No, we're not. We stop. We're going to talk about who's got better hookers, who's got better steakhouses, why are all your people coming to Brighton Beach?
There'll be some bonding. Yeah. There'll be some bonding.
Right.
Maybe Putin's mad at Trump trying to derail the the gas line pipeline deal.
With Germany?
And the oil with Germany.
And maybe Trump is mad about those 12 Russians who, as it turns out, need to be sent home at some point. That, in fact, all that took place during the Obama administration.
All did, and the whole thing, Rosenstein coming down with those indictments on Friday, that was all timing, political, to undermine the president. We'll get into it all in a little bit.
1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-8292. Congressman Lee Zeldin, one of our local favorites. He'll join us today. C.J. Nitkowski talking baseball. A lot going on. Monday morning, Bernie and Sid. Welcome back.
You will not call me baby.
Bernie and Sid in the morning. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Entertainment news now.
I'm Juliette Huddy. The summer roast was delicious. I'm talking about the Comedy Central roast, of course. At the center of the skewering over the weekend, actor Bruce Willis. He was taunted and teased by everyone from Moonlighting co-star Cybill Shepherd to some of his movie stars like Edward Norton, Kevin Pollak, comedians Jeff Ross, dressed, by the way, like Kim Jong-un, and accompanied by the real Dennis Rodman. Even Martha Stewart joined in on the roast, but the real stunner was surprise guest Demi Moore. His ex-wife had some great zingers, including joking around about how Willis has always said his biggest failure was the end of their marriage. She says, Bruce, don't be so hard on yourself. You had much bigger failures. Planet Hollywood, Hudson Hawk, campaigning for Michael Dukakis, etc., etc., etc. And the hot couple consisting of Donald Trump Jr. and Fox News star Kimberly Guilfoyle also got roasted over the weekend, heating things up by the pool in French Riviera hotspot Saint-Tropez. The two were at Nikki Beach, a club famous for its elite clientele, splashy beach parties, and internationally known DJs. The twosome, who reportedly arrived by helicopter, were caught on camera making out in the famously French way. Trump wearing a straw hat and flowered board shorts, Guilfoyle wearing a simple maxi dress. They'd spend the end of last week in the City of Lights, where they took pictures in front of the Eiffel Tower. Guilfoyle also appears to have the approval, not just of the president, but of the first lady as well. I'm Juliette. That's entertainment.
All right.
All right, back here on the Bernie and Sid Show.
I must admit,
Monday morning, a lot going on here, by the way. A lot going on in national politics, local politics, sports, international sports especially, with a new Wimbledon champ and a new World Cup soccer champ. But a lot of the country now, a lot of the world, I should say, the world, eyes on Helsinki, Finland, where coming up today is the big, I don't know, the... Some people are calling it a summit. Some don't want to call it that. It's a meeting.
Yeah. You know,
what is it?
Listen, nobody knows. Yeah. A lot of people don't. What happened was the Brussels summit was organized and the trip to England. And then Putin said, hey, why don't you come over? We have a little meeting, you and me, somewhere close by. And that's what happened. And,
right.
And Trump said, okay, let's do it.
Right.
And they came up with Helsinki right after... After the London stuff with the Queen and Theresa May and all that stuff, and that's what this is all about. And so, okay, I'll meet you. We'll sit down for a little while, and we'll get to know each other. And that's it. It's not any more complicated than that. Putin requested it, and they're doing it. And then, of course, you had the indictments handed down on Friday in dramatic fashion to try, in my opinion, my estimation, a lot of other people's, Rosenstein is one of them. He's one of those guys.
But here's what doesn't make sense, okay? From somebody, again, who's not as knee-deep into it. I think I represent more of America than,
per se,
most of the folks on the radio. Even if you're not all that savvy with this, the indictments he hands down for these 12 Russians, all this took place during the Obama administration.
Bingo.
So my question
is... Very good.
Right, so how does it help? How does it help Rosenstein and the Democrats and Chuck Schumer if, in fact, all these guys that got indicted on Friday have nothing to do with Donald Trump?
Because the implication that they wanted you to take away from all this is that the Russians did it to help President Trump. They think they colluded together, and that's exactly what they want you to think. And now they put the pressure on Trump to go to Helsinki, and hey, while you're there, press Putin and get him to extradite those 12 guys that we just indicted,
right?
Which, of course, is never going to happen.
Well, when Jeff Glor, that doofus from CBS, who I thought was about to lose his job, but I guess not good for him. Anyway, he had Trump on yesterday. He brought that up, and Trump's like, yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, because it's not in the cards. It's against the Russian Constitution, but forget that. It wouldn't do it anyway. And, you can indict a ham sandwich in this country.
You can.
So they indict 12 Russian guys that are never going to show up. I mean, you know, it's easy to do. And to do it on the day before he goes to Helsinki, I mean, it just stinks of politics, and it forces people to say, well, you know what? After this, he should not be, he shouldn't be meeting with Putin because well, you know what just happened. Well, I mean, even your boy Chuck Todd got caught up into.
Yeah, it's funny. I love Chuck, and he wasn't on last Friday. He's not going to be on this Friday either. But I didn't like him. I said I didn't watch any of the shows. I did watch a little bit of Chuck. I didn't like him very much yesterday. The Warner conversation, I couldn't stand.
Yeah, he was all about the defending Peter Strzok.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Strzok was the victim of
bullying,
crazy McCarthyism.
Bullying. Yeah, yeah.
And with this, this is what he said about canceling. And this is typical. Not this is not Chuck Todd. He's running with their narrative and their talking points. This is Chuck Todd. Over the weekend.
It's stunning to me that there isn't a larger chorus here to at least postpone it. If you recall, President Trump canceled the North Korean summit for a day, technically, based on what he thought was, you know, nasty words that were said about Vice President Pence. So he threatened to cancel a summit, essentially, for much less than, obviously, the indictment of Vladimir Putin, who clearly now, at least if you believe the United States Justice Department, they have confirmed that Vladimir Putin has lied to the president and to his face.
And that, but they're just indictments. Right. All right. So he's going over. And by the way, the CIA, our CIA, we got involved in dismantling and destroying a whole Iranian nuclear plant. I mean, it was a brilliant move, us and the Israelis. And Obama he sent Paul Begala over to meddle in the Israeli. I mean, these things happen. I mean, not that it's good, and we should be on our defense. And by the way, the Russians tried to hack the RNC server. They couldn't because security was a lot better. Podesta's password, he was Hillary's campaign chief, was password.
That's tough.
I mean, why did you get hacked? And the DNC, by the way, hasn't turned over their server to the FBI in their investigation.
Yeah, you know, I know Hillary Clinton talking about Podesta. She was one of the folks yesterday that was all over Trump for this meeting with Putin. Let's take a short break.
She tweeted, by the way, before you do that. She tweets this. Trump tweets out congratulations to
Well,
France.
Save the tweet. Okay. I think people are going to want to hear this.
Yeah, this is funny.
Hillary Clinton, of all people going after Donald Trump on this. We'll have her tweet right after these words.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
We'll be talking to President Putin about a number of things. Ukraine. We'll be talking about Syria. We'll be talking about other parts of the Middle East. I will be talking about nuclear proliferation.
Always a lot of talk about a lot of stuff there. Donald Trump, Putin's there in Helsinki. They're getting ready. When we last left you on the Bernie and Sid show, we're about to talk about a certain tweet sent out by the lady that lost to Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton.
She's very bitter.
Very bitter.
And
hysterical.
And lazy.
Yep.
But, yeah, she tweets out after Trump tweeted out congratulations to France, who played extraordinary soccer, blah, blah, blah. She replied to that, great World Cup. Question for President Trump as he meets Putin. Do you know which team you play for?
My God.
So Trump tweeted out, unfortunately, no matter how well I do at the summit, if I was given the great city of Moscow as retribution for all the sins and evils committed by Russia over the years, I wouldn't return to criticism that it was good enough, that I should have gotten St. Petersburg in addition, he says. But he says he's going to ask Putin firmly about the Russian meddling and all that stuff. And I believe him.
Oh, we'll see.
And look, and the point, whose team are you on? This is the lady that sold 20% of our uranium to the Russians, or her husband's collecting hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, while their foundation is collecting millions from the Russians for their quote-unquote charity foundation.
I'm glad you brought that up. A couple of days ago when I hammered Peter Strzok on Twitter, I don't know, Jill, you saw this. I hammered Peter Strzok on Twitter. One of the folks that got right back to me was one of our favorite comedic actors, Tom Arnold, on Twitter.
Really?
Yes, he did right away. And he said, Putin get to you, Sid? Just those words. In fact, I wanted Jill to print all this whole exchange out. So I said, yeah, he got to me. I said, I wanted on some of that money that the Clintons got when they sold all that uranium to Russia. I said, Tom, the real Russian collusion. To which he responded, LOL, ha, ha, ha.
No response.
And that was it. No, there was no response.
No, see, again.
And then I told him, by the way, I don't care if you like Trump or not. I want to go for dinner. Come on the show. Meet me and Bernie in the city. But the point is, I said to him, I want in on the real Russia collusion.
Good for you.
And he had no response.
You see, you have become educated, I think, since you first came up to New York.
Stay woke!
I mean, I think you were down with guys like Tom Arnold, but
oh,
you,
I still am.
But,
I love him.
But as far as the political scene,
no,
it's inconvenient for you because now you know the facts,
right?
And that's the problem.
Yeah, but it's not a problem.
You can't
because
go along with this fake outrage because you know too much.
That's true. But I'm always good afterwards with, I really don't care. Let's go for dinner. Let's go blah, 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 blah. So I very rarely get to the point. Like with Billy Baldwin, that turned out to be a serious fight. And of course, he called me a drunk and blah, blah, blah. But with most of these guys, if I like them and I like what they do, I'm usually able to kind of soften the blow when they find out that, no, I'm on the other side politically.
Unless they're just bust out crazy.
Like Billy Baldwin.
And irrational. Like
was a complete douchebag.
Listen, the fact of the matter is Trump expelled more diplomats, Russian diplomats, than Obama. He imposed way harsher sanctions. He killed 200 Russian soldiers in Syria, avenging those poisoned Muslim children. That's the kind of racist he is. He's given lethal weapons to Ukraine. Unlike Obama, again, he strengthened NATO since Thursday. NATO has agreed to pony up $14 billion more, which is a drop in the bucket. But still, he's strengthened it since last week. He's called out Germany for funneling millions of dollars to Russia, which we didn't even know about. So who is Putin's lapdog? And again, this Russian meddling, as you pointed out last half hour, occurred under the previous president.
Right, who did nothing about it.
Not only did he nothing about it, he... And I hate this phrase. He poo-pooed it in October of 2016. This is Obama in October of 2016. And he knew what the Russians were doing. And President now President Trump was saying, this thing is rigged. I smell something's getting rigged here.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections, in part because they're so decentralized. And the numbers of votes involved. There's no evidence that that has happened in the past or that there are instances in which that will happen this time. And so I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
Yeah.
See, one of the guys that
I couldn't be more wrong.
One of these guys that I have, I can't figure out is Bernie Sanders talking about elections being rigged. I mean, we know for a fact here that the DNC screwed this guy. We know it. Hillary Clinton and the DNC screwed Bernie Sanders. And the fact that he still has this, I guess it does show some loyalty to the party. But he was out there yesterday, too, just destroying Donald Trump. He's a liar. He's no good. I mean, just killed him. And in the meantime, his own party, the DNC, screwed him out of what probably should have been the nomination.
And if he had any onions and he fought her harder, I think maybe he would have won the nomination.
I really do.
But he was sort of cowardly in the debates, didn't call her out on it. And lost. Nobody likes a guy who seems whipped to some lazy, cheating woman.
Right.
And that's what she turned out to be. Now, there is one guy on the left. Well, he's with CNN anyway. And he's a guy that we think is kind of impartial a lot of the times. Is Jake Tapper.
We like Jake. Yeah.
And he was one of the guys who was more reasonable yesterday on the Sunday morning shows. This is what he said.
You read this indictment and you think, boy, the Obama administration, they really kind of missed the ball on this. I mean, yes, they issued that report, but President Obama said, what did he say? He told Putin to cut it out or knock it off. It wasn't particularly strong. And then there was all this hesitation about warning the American people for fear of looking partisan. In retrospect, doesn't it seem to you that perhaps the Obama administration was at least to a degree asleep at the switch?
Oh,
yeah.
How about that?
Very good. And again, after the Russians invaded Crimea under Obama, invaded Ukraine under Obama, expanded in Syria under Obama, then the meddling in the elections and nothing.
No.
And Syria crossed the red line. Nothing. Nothing.
So will you be later on? We'll break here for the end of the first hour. Again, Congressman Lee Zeldin in the 8 o'clock hour and terrific baseball analyst, local kid CJ Nitkowski in the 9 o'clock hour. Tonight is the home run hitting contest. Eight big time power guys in Major League Baseball, including Jesse Aguiar, the leading home run hitter in the league, 24 home runs for the Brewers, will go head to head tonight. Will you be immersed, Bernard McGurk, later on tonight in Putin Trump? Or like me, will you be watching eight knuckleheads trying to hit home runs in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I will tell you this. If Aaron Judge was participating, I'd definitely be in.
No local guys.
But he's out.
Yeah, no local
so
guys.
So I think I might be.
You're going to be out?
Yeah, I want to see Judge.
No, I know, but he doesn't want to screw up his swing, and he wants to You'd rather judge. Well, you don't like the Yankees, but.
But I like Aaron.
No, I know.
So he screwed up the home run derby for me.
There are some good young hitters tonight, though. This kid, just worth watching. The first round, you've got Javier Baez of the Chicago Cubs up against this kid, Max Muncy of the Dodgers. He's got 22 home runs. This kid will be fun to watch. We'll take a break. We'll come back. All this going on. It's a very exciting Bernie and Sid show on a Monday, and we'll be back right after these words.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Don't go another 3 years on a job you don't like, doing something that you're not passionate about. Life is flying by. This is your one shot. You don't get a do-over. We can't relive our 20s, relive our 30s. Once this day is over, we can never get it back.
Very prophetic words from the great Joel Osteen. Back here, hour number two of the Bernie and Sid in the Morning Show on a Monday. We'll get back to Trump and Putin. They're about to meet momentarily in Helsinki, Finland, plus all the great sports. Congratulations to France, your World Cup winners. Djokovic winning at Wimbledon, and the Major League Baseball All-Star break is here. But Joel Osteen, you guys who listen to the show know that I became a very, very big fan of Joel Osteen many months ago. Found myself watching Joel after Chuck Todd and Meet the Press every Sunday, and actually admitted on the air with Bernard and other places that I'm inspired. I mean, the guy has a nice message.
Understandably, just that little message right there that was very, very well said, very inspirational.
And very true.
Very on the money, yes.
So I had seen this about 3 months ago. He was promoting. He travels a lot during the summer. He goes to different arenas and venues and sells them out. He's done it at Citi Field, at Yankee Stadium, all over the country. And I had seen a couple of months ago that coming up on July 14th, he was going to be at the Barclays Center right here in Brooklyn.
We made a big deal out of this.
Yes, we did.
And it culminated in a nice invitation to you from Billy Joel Osteen.
Well,
a very, very nice invitation.
Well, it was. I mean, we wanted to get Osteen on the show leading up to it. He did not do that. But he did, in fact, send me 4 tickets. And his producer / helper, I guess, sent a couple of emails saying that Joel is really, really excited to meet Sid. Anyway, long story short, Friday comes. I got to take my kids to the airport, as I told you, Friday. First time ever, Ava and Gabe traveled alone.
All the excuses.
It's a legitimate excuse. So the flight was late. I was stuck at Kennedy Airport, and I couldn't make it back on time. But I'm sitting at the airport, Bernie.
You never planned to go. Come on. Come on, bro.
I'm sitting at the airport, and I get a picture. You know Laura Smith, who works here?
Yes, I do.
So she had gone on Friday. There were 2 Joel Osteen shows in Brooklyn, one in the afternoon and one at night. She had gone to the afternoon show with Yola Nash. You know her? She does the weekend show.
Yes, 2 nice ladies.
Right. So they send me a picture. It's Yola and Laura in the middle, Joel Osteen. And the caption reads, "What a great show. You're going to love it tonight. Joel can't wait to meet you."
Oh, boy.
What do you got?
Oh, boy.
And what time did you get that now?
I got that about 6 o'clock Friday night.
Ooh, that's a little late if you had already decided not to go.
But hadn't
still,
decided yet.
A lot of guilt.
Some guilt. The real guilt comes after, about an hour later, when I get a message from Joel's girl, Barbara. That's her name, right, Barbara?
Andrea Davis.
Andrea, thank you. And she goes, "We're looking for you. Joel can't wait to meet you. He wants to take you backstage after the show.
This is terrible.
We can't find you."
This is awful. This is one hell. That guy went out of his way. This is a mega superstar.
Did you respond to her?
Huh?
What did you say to her?
What's that?
Andrea.
You know what I said? I swear to God. How about those Mets?
How about them, baby?
You should have said this. Should have came on the show.
Well, I didn't want to say that.
Is that the deal breaker in your mind?
No. Sometimes, yes. But this had nothing to do with that. I'm not mad at him or any of that stuff. I was late at the airport and Danielle didn't want to go. So anyway.
That's the main reason.
Yeah.
Danielle said no.
So I'm all worried all weekend long that if I upset Joel Osteen, then Jesus may be upset with me. I'm not joking around here. I'm being serious.
No, seriously. This is a bad omen.
Right. But it's all been fixed, and I'll tell you why. So my kids are in North Carolina. Danielle's stepfather, Peter, lives in Charlotte. And we usually go as a family together every summer. But being that we're doing the morning show now, Danielle's got a serious job, we couldn't leave for an extended period of time, so we sent the kids alone. They are very religious people. They're not Jewish. And they go to church every Sunday morning in Charlotte. In fact, Peter's wife, Janie, my kid's grandmother, she's like a big macha there. You know, she, whatever she does. What would be like a job at church? What would you do there?
She is an organizer. She holds picnics and...
Yes.
And she just, you know, she's a woman about town.
That's exactly right. And all the churchgoers love her, and she's a big deal.
Yeah.
So when she shows up with her grandchildren... They make a big deal. Now, they knew that Ava and Gabe were Jewish. The congregation knew that. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter. They made a big deal. So anyway, so it's about halfway through, and Ava FaceTimes me and Danielle. They're singing this song. Now, do you know the song Jesus Surrenders or Surrender to Jesus?
No.
You don't know it?
No, but it sounds nice.
Okay. Anyway, my son, Gabriel.
What is he, French? Is he Italian?
My son, Gabe, all 9 years of him, who I spent... thousands and thousands of dollars sending him to the Jewish Community Center, the JCC in Boca Raton, Florida. I mean thousands to make sure this kid knows his Hebrew. Blah, blah. He is not chanting, not singing. He is screaming at the top of his lungs.
I love this.
Surrender to Jesus.
That is great.
And the whole congregation is singing along now with Gabe. Gabe has taken over.
I could see
surrender to Jesus.
I could see
my son, Gabriel Rosenberg.
You know what? It's an ecumenical thing. Look at it that way. The kid is getting into the spirit, and he's not afraid to participate out loud and proud. Whatever it is, there's a spirit, and there's something happening, and he's in the middle of it.
That's why
that is beautiful.
That's why we allow him to go. We could have been like, nah, no, thank you. We let them go to church. Look, I went to midnight mass one Christmas Eve. I think that when I went to church, it was beautiful. I'm all for it. You're right. There's something about the spirit, but he's got to lead the choir. Surrender to Jesus. Gabriel Rosenberg.
You ever hear of Jews for Jesus?
Yeah, I hate those people, to be honest.
Well, I hope you don't hate your son. Oh, this is beautiful.
That would be like you going to shul and leading a Don Olam or Ain Kelohenu.
Walvin?
What? Jill knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. Are you Jewish?
Jill hasn't seen the inside of a synagogue.
That's true.
Since her mom dragged her there at 8 years old.
But she's so Jewish, Jill. She's like.
She ain't Jewish.
Hey, by the way, Jill.
Yeah, baby.
Next time you tell us, like you get upset when Donald Trump compares MS-13 to animals and.
Yeah.
Yeah, next time you get upset about that, I want you to go in today's New York Daily News. I want you to read the story about the jaguar that escaped from his cage at the zoo in New Orleans this weekend. And killed 8 other unsuspecting animals.
No,
killed 5 alpacas, an emu, and 2 foxes.
Listen, it's very good.
All they were doing was hanging out at their house, and Mr. Jaguar walks in and rips these 8 animals to shreds.
Mr. Jaguar should not have been caged.
They were all animals.
Yes, they were all animals.
Yes, but this animal killed animals.
Even
in the wild, that animal, that jaguar... would be killing other animals.
That's right.
That's what they do.
That's why this nonsense. Animals don't kill animals. They didn't. The fox didn't invite the jaguar into the house. He walked in and killed everybody.
But that's the animal's instinct.
No, you can't keep
a jaguar in a box.
It's one or the other.
This.
They either kill or they don't kill.
He wasn't a sly fox because he didn't have. He wasn't on guard. He didn't have his defense.
No, I mean the emus and the alpacas get a pass. But
right,
the foxes no.
Foxes should have put up a better fight. Yeah,
you got to be slicker than that,
right?
You're like a low IQ fox.
But imagine
you're like a Maxine Waters of foxes.
Maybe like Rick Fox. Imagine he's actually a very smart guy. Imagine though you're working at that zoo yesterday morning. And you walk in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and there's, like, mangled animals all over the place. Ugh. All over the place.
Sad.
And then you go to the jaguars. He ain't there. So, anyway, do kill animals, even without provocation.
Yeah, but not to join a gang. That's their
And by the way.
The jaguar gang?
No, I'm saying MS-13. They do it for initiation.
By the way, that giraffe that was killed out where the lady was like, my great hunt or my big hunt or whatever, whatever it was that she called it.
Her big hunt.
20,000 pounds of meat for people to eat. 20,000 pounds.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it was just a killing for a trophy.
She didn't do it for
people,
that.
People actually, but they do. They eat the meat from the giraffes. Mm.
But she
the
didn't
meat.
Do it for that. She did.
I didn't say she did.
Smile.
But the point is, no, I agree with you. I don't see I don't see the appeal of taking a picture in front of a crumpled up giraffe. But I did read that the 20,000 pounds of meat gets eaten by the local population.
How about that?
I like it.
So it's like shooting a deer.
They actually found 20,000 pounds of meat under Oprah's dress.
Anyway.
Sid took his headphones off. I guess that means we're going to commercial.
Yes. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Entertainment news now.
I'm Juliet with your entertainment report. So we're finding a little bit more about Sacha Baron Cohen's new series, Who is America? I can't say that name, Bernie. You're going to have to, every time I click at you, you got to say the name, right? I can't say it. I keep stumbling.
What's the name?
Sacha Baron Cohen.
You got it. Sacha Baron Cohen.
I want to say Sacha Baron. Anyway.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Thank you.
Just call him Borat.
I'm going to call him Borat.
That's it.
Specifically, who else besides Sarah Palin got punked? The show premiered, by the way, last night on Showtime. Here's a clip of a segment where Cohen, or Borat, played the role of an Israeli anti-terror expert.
My wife, she have a gun, and she shot me once. You know, what can I do? I get only in the middle of the night.
Okay, so in this next clip, you saw this?
I watched it. The worst thing you can say about an alleged comedy show with hoaxes and pranks. It was boring.
It went on. Some of the segments went on and on and on. It was kind of like...
wasn't good.
They went down the rabbit hole. In this next clip, still in the Israeli terror expert disguise.
I like Borat.
So do I, yeah. He talks with a guest who supports arming children in schools.
This segment of the conversation would absolutely cause heads to explode here in this country.
Why? Because they will be shot? Or?
Because that they're so prejudiced against young people having guns, and especially in a school.
Some of the other duped guests we'll see this season include former Alabama judge and gubernatorial candidate Roy Moore, who says he fought for his country in Vietnam and he's ready to defend her again, whatever that means. He also threatened to sue Showtime. Also, former Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio. He was also the victim of Cohen, who was apparently disguised as a comedian from Finland. Iconic news anchor Ted Koppel also made the punked list, with Cohen posing as a wheelchair-bound right-wing blogger.
And also... a wheelchair-bound veteran with Sarah Palin, for which he should be beaten so badly that he actually needs the wheelchair.
So you're taking cues from President Trump, who feels that he should be beaten as well.
I didn't hear Trump say that. I said this on Friday. Did Trump actually say that?
What was the clip that you were playing where he was going off on
back in 2003. He should be punched in the face. Yeah.
Well.
Okay.
There you go. Listen,
you're impersonating.
He's a comedian.
If you had a kid who was in a wheelchair that got injured in Iraq,
Bernie,
and you had this mutt doing that,
you
you'd
guys,
be mad too.
I hear you guys say things that are it's comedy. You're not being serious about
things. When it comes to disabled veterans, I have a soft spot in my heart.
All right. Well, but don't you feel that comedy can be provocative?
Yes.
And that's why I watched it
last night. I didn't boycott it.
All right. So you get grade?
I give him a little beating, you know, that's all.
Between A and
F. I'm not losing my mind over it.
B plus, C minus.
Over what? The show?
The show.
Oh, C minus. Easily. Oh, it's terrible.
Oh, wow.
Terrible.
Well, hopefully it's going to get better because he is funny when he's funny. And that's entertainment.
He had to help himself. He finally got some help. Played some with Cincinnati last year. And wait a minute! Did that go where we think it went?
What the hit the back wall of the, where the Adidas sign is out there.
Nobody on the road. Nobody on the beach. I feel it in the air. The summer's out of reach. Empty lake.
What a great memory that was. 10 years ago today, the first time and only time the All-Star Game was in Yankee Stadium here in the Bronx. And the night before, that was Josh Hamilton at the time on the Texas Rangers. And you know his story, addicted to heroin, all those issues, and got sober for a while and put on a majestic performance in the home run hitting contest 10 years ago today in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium. And of course, later on tonight, we will do it again, folks. Tomorrow night, the All-Star Game in Washington, D.C. Eight hitters, of course, going head-to-head. First round tonight, you got Hoskins of the Phillies against Aguilar of the Brewers. Freddie Freeman of the Braves up against the hometown kid, Bryce Harper of the Nationals. Then you take on Kyle Schwarber of the Cubs, taking on Alex Bregman of the Astros. And finally, Javier Baez of the Cubs, taking on the terrific Dodger rookie Max Muncy. All tonight, leading up to the big All-Star Game coming your way tomorrow. And of course, not just baseball, but other sports stuff in the news, above and beyond France winning the World Cup and Djokovic winning his fourth Wimbledon title, taking out Kevin Anderson in straight sets. There are football players, I guess, Bernie, that are now part of today's news segments.
Yes, that's true, Sydney. Well, first of all, you saw that video last week of Pac-Man Jones wearing a backpack, getting into a fist fight at an airport.
Such a piece of garbage.
And he actually won the fight. He knocked the guy out,
right.
I believe, but whatever.
Yeah, just so you know, quickly, there's a guy.
I know.
But there's a guy in Las Vegas who's in a wheelchair today because one of the nights when Pac-Man Jones, quote-unquote, made it rain and turned into some shooting and blah, blah, blah. The guy was working like three jobs. He was working a late-night strip joint in Las Vegas to help pay for his wife's law school. And because of Pac-Man Jones, he's in a wheelchair today. So in
Chicago, they were rioting Saturday night because a black man was killed by the police.
Right.
And the police said, hey, he had a gun. And he was reaching for the gun, but it didn't stop the people from rioting. They were out there, and they were just jumping on police cars.
Well, let me just say this. If the police say he's got a gun, and I'm of the mindset I hate the police as ignorant and hateful as it is, I may riot. But here's the problem. There's a video, and you can see the gun.
Well, that's what I'm about to get to. So they riot Saturday night before the video was released. They released the video Sunday morning, and the video, sure enough, shows not only that he has a gun, but that he's reaching into his waistband for the gun. And then he gets shot. He gets shot and killed. And then, of course, Sunday night, you have 50 people, a nice little peaceful protest. In other words,
right. They
just sort of recede. And this is CNN. CNN! Otherwise, they'd be all over this. Of course, the Trump Helsinki thing is sort of eclipsing all other news. But they write, the man Chicago police shot and killed Saturday, this is their first paragraph, shot and killed Saturday, appeared to be reaching for a gun in his waistband, according to body camera footage released by the department on Sunday. And you can hear a collective sigh by the Don Lemons of the world.
That sucks.
What are we going to do after the Trump Helsinki thing? What kind of outrage can we manufacture? We don't have this.
No, not this one.
And then they in the same article, a little later on, it says that residents had asked for more police presence in the area where the shooting took place. You see, the people there, they want the cops.
Of course.
They want them, but this is lost. They want the cops to help protect them. They like the cops.
Yeah.
It's the thugs that don't like the cops.
That's right.
And then there was a cop killed in Weymouth, Massachusetts. He was actually, it was a car crash. The driver runs away. The cop chases him, pulls out his gun and chases him. The guy throws a rock at him, hits him in the head. And he takes the cop's gun and then shoots him in the head, shoots him dead.
Disgusting.
And Robert Kraft actually showed up at the Weymouth Police Department to pay his respects.
That's nice.
But that story goes kind of by the wayside. I mean, they were all hot on this Chicago thing until the video came out. And then it was like, okay, let's go back to Trump and Helsinki.
Which, by the way, that summit is going on right now. Trump and Putin in Helsinki, Finland. They are talking as you and I speak. So,
by the way, between each other, just with interpreters, and there'll be no transcript. Nobody will really know what they said. In any case, Pac-Man Jones, you know this guy. He's you just pointed out what a lowlife he is, that, and the other. But surprisingly, he was asked in another airport about this NFL kneeling policy. And let's see if the audio was legible, excuse me.
Yes, listenable.
Yes.
Intelligible.
What do you want to see happen? I mean, a lot of people are talking about that. I'm all for standing for the anthem.
He wants to stand.
Barely.
No,
he did say I would stand for the anthem. I did hear that.
Play the second one.
Yeah.
Do you feel like some of the players are maybe a little tone deaf when they're saying, Well, it's not about the servicemen. It's about these social issues and the police and all that.
Well, the social issues don't have nothing to do with the national anthem.
What's the best way that you think they could
figure out another way besides that way?
That's right, man.
I made out when he said social issues right. with the police have nothing to do
with the national anthem. Right. And then other things he said, I have relatives who've been to Iraq, and they should figure out another way to protest,
right.
essentially. So you have you don't have exact unanimity in the NFL. In fact, you only have about 100 players that actually have ever kneeled over the course of this whole Colin Kaepernick nonsense.
Including zero by the Philadelphia Eagles, who just won the Super Bowl, yet none of them wanted to go to the White House, except for one, Nick Folk. That was it. But they never knelt. Not one Eagle player knelt all season long.
They never knelt, but they still couldn't muster up the patriotism to show up to the White House.
We got a couple of Giants. The Jets don't kneel either, by the way. That's why it was very easy for the owner, Johnson, his brother, Chris, to come out and say, well, it's okay at my guys. No, they don't kneel anyway. But the Giants have a couple, including the very, very highly paid defensive lineman, Olivier Vernon. That idiot. That's right, idiot.
And you're going to root for him, though.
Oh, absolutely. I love him. I got his jersey.
That idiot.
Come on.
Idiot's jersey.
He could get to the quarterback.
That's it. And you know, it's funny. We were talking about the home run hitting contest right before we went into the Pac-Man Jones and the cops and all that. And I was saying I'm going to watch the home run hitting contest tonight, but I really can't watch all of it. I just realized.
What's the problem?
I'm going to be here.
Oh, that's right.
Oh.
Your acting debut.
I'm not going to see Freddie Freeman against Bryce Harper because I'm going to be reading some script by Rob Bartlett.
Well, you can DVR it.
You could pull a Joel Osteen deal.
Right, that's right.
And just not show up.
And if I could screw over Joel Osteen, much bigger name than Rob.
Just say
Rob's a friend. He's a real friend.
That's right, but you could say that Gaby is having an episode, or he's very nervous without his parents.
I could do that.
And you got to FaceTime. I mean, that would be very understandable.
What if I said Gaby wants to watch the home run hitting contest with Dad? What's bigger than baseball among fathers and sons?
You got to say there's some sort of crisis.
Crisis, okay.
Yeah, because just blowing off Rob's big show tonight.
Right.
I mean, that wouldn't.
Well, we got about 12 hours to figure this out. So,
we have a few minutes right now.
No, there's a consensus of people that really believe I'm not going to show up tonight. I'm not going
to
make the guy write a whole script and which he's done. I can't do that to Rob.
No, you can't.
Can I?
He's too sweet. No,
you did it to Joel Osteen,
right?
But it didn't really hurt him.
We're not really good friends.
And plus, I mean, like,
he's a millionaire.
You know, you're just another pain in the ass showing up backstage.
Right.
To be quite honest.
Oh, no. Actually, he was the one who was reaching out to me.
All right, if you want to think that.
I guess.
you can't do it to Rob. Just show up. Right. Suck it up and be there.
I'm going to miss Max Muncy versus Javier Baez.
But DVR it. Aaron Judge won't be there, so no big deal.
No, I like these other guys, though. Screw Judge. I want to see Bryce Harper in D.C. hitting home runs in his own stadium.
Hey, that's a big deal that it's in D.C.
The president's
not going to show up.
No, he's not. And it also screws Met fans because the best pitcher in Major League Baseball this year, including Severino, who's been just okay his last couple of starts, despite the win total, which is down because his team sucks, is Jacob deGrom. He's been the best pitcher in baseball this year, but he's not going to start tomorrow night in all likelihood because he got a 12-game winner in Max Scherzer, who plays in D.C.
That's an outrage.
You know, you say it's an outrage, but it's funny. I remember four years ago, the All-Star game was in Queens, and I think it was Tim Lincecum who was having a great year for the Giants.
This is the guy with the long hair.
Back then. And I think Giant manager Bruce Bochy said, he's my guy on my team, but we're in Queens, and the guy having a great year here was Matt Harvey. And Matt Harvey started the All-Star game for the National League 4 years ago in Queens. So I think the Dodger manager, Dave Roberts, will do the same thing. It's the hometown guy. It makes it more exciting, even though, in this case, DeGrom should start.
No doubt about it.
It'll be Scherzer, I would think. We'll find out today.
I'm going to be very – no wonder Trump's not showing up. He's doing the right thing.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Pressing what has now become a desperate search for John F. Kennedy, his wife, and her sister. Let's pause and say there's been an awful lot of talk, as there should be, about the tragedy that looms in front of the Kennedy family.
A Salvation Army band played, and the
children drunk lemonade, and the morning lasted all day. And through an open window came, like Sinatra in a younger day, pushing the town away.
Congressman Lee Zeldin set to join us in about 15 minutes, representing the 1st District out on the island, Suffolk County, Smithtown, Brookhaven, Riverhead, South Hold, Southampton, East Hampton, Shelter Island, all a part of it, Islip as well. But there you heard from Dan Rather. That's right, 19 years ago today. And I remember it very, very vividly. I was at Sugarloaf, a ski resort up in Maine. John F. Kennedy Jr. on the way to a wedding in Massachusetts. Plane went missing on the way to the wedding Friday night. And I guess they found the plane Saturday. Is that right? The day after? Was it 2 days after, maybe? Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah. And he was gone. Hey, Jill, here's a question for you.
Okay.
How old was Junior when the president, his dad, was assassinated in Dallas?
Three.
No way. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
I remember the picture of him saluting his dad at the funeral.
How about and that? Caroline was, what, about a year or two older,
yeah,
right?
That's it. Well.
You know, I was taking a subway, like the number, the 19, one day, and I was holding the pole.
What?
There were no seats. And I looked down, and sitting right there in all his handsome glory was JFK Jr.
Yeah, my wife to this day says he's the most beautiful man that ever lived. Ever.
So cute.
Ever.
He was
a nice guy. As I mentioned, you may have heard me say, I've seen him at Rangers and Knicks games. I used to see him there. I didn't speak to him.
Right.
The only time I ever spoke to him was once at WFAN. He came over to promote his George magazine.
Mm. You met him?
Yeah. I escorted him in to the Kaufman Astoria studios. He was late, and he's like, I got to get to a bathroom.
Got to make a duty.
Yeah. So I took him to the bathroom. And
by the way, just if Danielle's listening, yes, he even made duties. Believe it. I know, it sounds
when
crazy.
He came out, this is what he said to me. He said, bad combination, raisin bran and coffee. That's what he said.
Now listen.
I said, come right this way. Come on. We got to get you on the air.
You're as heterosexual as it gets. We joke around about all that other stuff, but you're as hetero as it gets. But when you meet Junior, were you, I don't want to say stunned, but were you captivated by how handsome he was?
Not necessarily, no.
Which doesn't make you gay, by the way. And if you want to,
I know
too,
that. But I realize that. Right. No, I was not.
Okay.
In my opinion, there are more handsome guys than him.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
Imus? Give me one that's more handsome than your estimation.
Brad Pitt.
You think Brad Pitt's better looking?
Back in the day.
You could make
that
case.
I don't think so. He's got bad skin, by the way. I don't. This is all very subjective, obviously.
It's all subjective. No, he's a good-looking guy. Yeah, I wasn't blown away, A, by his celebrity or by his looks.
You know, you say you weren't blown away by his celebrity, but you talk about him going to Knick games, for example, and now they still show that creep, what's his name, Spike Lee. I guess LA, I know.
I sat next to Spike Lee once.
Yeah,
I wanted to elbow him.
He's been on my show a million times in Miami, sat with him also, just like you and I are sitting now, and he was very nice, and he's a good interview, but he's a creep. And really, I don't even know other celebrities that are at the Garden all the time for Nick. Like, I know LA, you get Nicholson, the Clippers games, you get Billy Crystal. I don't even know who the Nick fan celebrity, Woody Allen, I guess.
McEnroe.
Yeah. McCartney once in a while, Francesa. But you'd have to agree. I'll say this. In my lifetime, when I think about the New York celebs, in my lifetime, no one was as big and no one is still as big as Junior. When going to a garden, going to an event, yeah. I still think JFK Junior was Mr. New York, right?
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, he would have... He would have taken that Senate seat that Hillary eventually...
He would have been president. What do you mean Senate?
Snapped up.
He may have been president.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, he may have been, but then you had the young black guy, the charismatic black guy from Chicago. He pushed everybody out of the
Kennedy
way.
Kennedy could have beaten him. That's the one guy. It's fair. He may have won anyway because he was a charismatic black guy.
But yes, he was definitely in line to be a president at some point.
He had that potential. He was on that trajectory, even though he took him a few times to pass the bar. But
four, to be exact.
That's,
my
that's
wife
fine.
Once in each state. I always tell him that. You passed the bar the first time in New York and Florida.
Listen, we don't always elect rocket scientists.
Well, but, he wasn't stupid. He just wasn't a good test taker like Jill.
He just wasn't. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't that sharp.
But listen, not on a world.
Nice guy, though.
Nice guy. Not on a world level, because the Beatles were as big as it gets. We know that forever, for 50 years. On a New York level, bigger loss, John Lennon, JFK Jr.
JFK Jr.
Really? Wow. But you know that in Strawberry Field to this day in Central Park, hundreds of people still show up on the anniversary of Lennon's death.
I was definitely, if you want to say, impacted more by JFK. I mean, he was a young guy.
Right.
You know, he had so much potential. Lennon, really, his glory days were behind him.
Yeah, it's some decent solo stuff, but you're right.
Lennon had, JFK had such, as I said, potential. I mean, just like we just talked about. He was probably a future president.
Plus, he was good-looking, had the good-looking wife.
All that
unlike
stuff.
Yoko.
Even though the wife was very upset all the time.
She was always pissed, yeah.
Yeah.
They fought all the time.
Yeah.
Actually, the wife's sister, who died in that same plane crash, she was cuter and nicer. Kind of like what I used to think about Pippa and Kate.
Yes, I agree.
Right.
She was cuter.
She was. No, that boy, they're all gone.
So maybe he was hitting that, too. Who knows?
Maybe they...
You know the Kennedys?
Yeah. Maybe that's what the fight was
you
about.
You know, your sister, she will spend the night with me at the vineyard, and you can stay with Uncle Teddy.
Oh, boy.
How about that?
He outlived them all, the great Uncle Teddy.
He did.
Outlived them all.
Including Mary Jo.
Well, that was, he made sure of that.
Well, he certainly didn't.
He was directly responsible for that.
He didn't help.
No, he didn't help. No. Actually, that movie, Chappaquiddick, is now on. You can buy it now on demand.
They could have used him at the cave in Thailand. You think I could fit through those crevices?
Yeah. Hey, right. Tough to drown that guy. Tough to drown him.
I hear they're pretty tight, and I'm kind of big these days. I don't go down for anybody. I don't go down for any woman. It's the other way around for me.
Well, we took a sad day and just made a mockery of it. So.
Yeah.
This was about JFK Jr. dying in tragic fashion. Why are we laughing so much?
Time plus tragedy equals we can laugh.
Comedy.
Equals the Bernie and Sid Show.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show. As Trump and Putin are ensconced in the presidential palace in Helsinki right now, doing God knows what. Well, they're having a meeting. On the line with us right now, we have a very esteemed guest. First and foremost, he's an Iraq war veteran, for which we thank him. He's also the congressman from Long Island representing the 1st District, giving our guy Peter King a run for his money as statesman of Long Island. He's on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And his name is Lee Zeldin. Good morning, Congressman Zeldin.
Good morning. It's good to be back on with you.
Nice to have you. It's always a pleasure. Now, listen, you're on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman Zeldin. And I wanted to ask you, with the Trump meeting Putin, the timing of the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's indictment of 12 Russians for meddling in our election on the eve, the timing on the eve of the Trump-Putin meeting, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, I don't have information that would say that it was done deliberately just before this meeting. My thoughts on Russia and as it impacts the meeting, I actually think that it helps the president. You know, when you're engaging with a foreign adversary like Vladimir Putin in Russia, and you know, the world leaders understand that there's domestic politics that play into advocacy, for Donald Trump, for the president to be raising this issue of meddling, which is something that Russia does. It's unacceptable. They do it in Afghanistan. They meddle with the Taliban, where we have our service members on the opposite side. They meddle with Assad in Syria. They meddle, and it's not good. So the president was planning on raising this issue. I would say in raising this issue, he actually has additional leverage because of this news back home, which is obviously international news very quickly. I don't know if the news was done with any timing related to the meeting. If I had that information, I'd be right. Certainly happy to comment on that. But I do believe that it actually helps the president because he was planning on raising this issue anyway.
Well, it helps him in two spots, really. For the people that are listening, not the folks that have an agenda, don't want to hear it. It's what you just talked about. And secondly, let's face it, these 12 folks who were just indicted, this all went down during the Obama administration. Now, the left doesn't care. They'll chalk that up to, well, it's all about Trump and blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, which Trump has tweeted the last couple of days, this didn't happen under his watch.
Yeah, so Devin Nunes, of all people, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, he was raising this threat to the Obama administration of Russia. We remember in 2012, obviously everyone saw the debate where Mitt Romney said that Russia was the largest geopolitical threat facing the United States, and President Obama said that, Soviet Union called whatever they wanted their foreign policy back and made light of it, and it was a joke at Mitt Romney's expense. And we all are aware of the hot mic incident where President Obama said, we have to get past the election. I need a little flexibility, or Hillary Clinton with the reset button. Yep. So the Obama administration, over the course of two terms, they didn't take any of this seriously whatsoever. And that includes 2016, even though the intel community, the law enforcement community are raising the red flags, they did nothing about it.
Not only that, of course, as you know, Congressman Zeldin, it was under Obama that Crimea was invaded, that Ukraine was invaded, that Russia expanded their influence in Syria, and of course the alleged Russian meddling, which none of which has been proven. But the implication with the indictments and the meddling, the whole thing, is the reason why Trump calls it a witch hunt is because the implication is that Trump colluded with the Russians, and now he's meeting with the guy he colluded with. I mean, I think that's why Rosenstein tried to undermine Trump by doing it then, to give the talking heads on TV to say, oh, we shouldn't be meeting with this guy yet, or he should be demanding that extradition, which is never going to happen. I mean, it just gives him something to whine about.
Well, yeah, I would say a couple things. One is that an overall principle that I want to see the United States of America, that I want to see the American president abiding by, is understanding that our enemies do not respect weakness, they only respect strength. And President Obama was an apologist for American exceptionalism throughout his two terms, going all around the world and really apologizing for American greatness, which is nothing to apologize for, and one that he does not have any right to apologize for. So the second thing is, I want my president to be meeting with these foreign leaders, including these adversaries like Vladimir Putin. And in the case of Vladimir Putin, in certain respects, we have to talk about issues on as friendly a basis as possible. When you're talking about the two nations that have the largest nuclear stockpiles in the world, well, we're talking about the need to wipe ISIS off the map in Iraq and Syria, where now, because of a vacuum created by the last administration, Russia has more of a presence in Syria than they've had before. I want our president talking to them. So, I mean, aside from the large overall principles and the way that President Obama approached this, which added additional challenges, as you just mentioned in your point, to the current day, July of 2018, and having a whole lot to talk about, if we're not having these conversations, if we don't have an open dialogue, I actually believe that is against America's best interest when you're dealing with the other nation that has the other largest nuclear stockpile in the entire world.
We couldn't agree more. Lee Zeldin, Congressman, 1st Congressional District on Long Island, all those fancy places where Howard Stern and Billy Joel hang out. Hey, listen, talking about this meeting with Putin, you're right. We agree, and Trump has said it. I'm going to sit down with Kim Jong, even though North Korea, not really our friends. I'm going to sit down with the president of China. I'm going to sit down with Putin. Because as we all know, sometimes it's better to keep our enemies closer than our friends. So it makes total sense to me that he would sit down with any one of these folks. But specifically Putin today, Lee, what do you think comes of this? Is there anything constructive? Is this just about two guys kind of rapping back and forth and acting tough? Or do you think something really constructive comes out of today's meeting?
Well, for one, as we've seen President Trump do with the leader of China, with the leader of Japan, with world leaders all across the entire planet, he develops a certain relationship with them that when, for some reason, whether let's say it's a trade and you're dealing with IP patent infringement with China, where you are talking to the North Koreans and it impacts greatly South Korea and Japan. When you build up that relationship with those world leaders, then when, you know, something might get said rhetorically by someone in, you know, your own government or theirs, or a policy is made, or you're battling over a policy where you're on opposite sides and you need to work through a problem, it's better when the leaders of both countries know each other and are able to pick up the phone and call and say, you know, Donald or Vladimir, and they're able to just talk through it to be able to de-escalate something that needs to get de-escalated. So as a tactic, that's good. Now, that doesn't mean that we are equals with any of these nations. One of the things that really bothered me when I saw President Obama sit down with the Castros and unilaterally make dozens of concessions and ask for nothing in return, or the way we sat down with Iran, where we got rolled at the negotiating table. In talking to our adversaries, that does not mean that you have to be an equal with them or worse, as we saw with President Obama. That conversation's good. You just need to stay strong throughout.
Absolutely, Congressman Lee Zeldin from Long Island. Listen, how great was it to have the president go over there to NATO and pretty much read them the riot act and educate the American people as to how we're getting screwed by our NATO friends and Germany's, you know, complicitness, funneling billions of dollars to Russia by purchasing a bunch of their energy supplies, which they could be buying from us. I mean, it was a masterful performance, I thought.
If the president doesn't raise that issue at NATO, no one's talking about it.
Right.
By the way, no one will ever be talking about this if we're not raising these issues, because as we're seeing these other countries who we are allies with, we are aligned with these other nations for generations, they're not raising the issues, willing to raise the issues that President Trump is. Now, the German peace with Russia is important to talk about. As far as the NATO alliance goes, it's been an important one. It's one that we want to be strong. However, we also do not believe that we should be responsible for the bulk of the NATO defense spending, for example, and that we should have these other countries stepping up the same way that we are proportionally. I mean, obviously, we are a larger country, but we are contributing so much to this alliance. And the president understands, and I agree with, that when you have people contributing more, they're more invested in the alliance. And I think that their country, whether it's the leadership of the country or the people of their country, they respect the ask that we're making. It happens to be a very reasonable ask that we're making, and I think it's very easy to understand why we're making it, and I think it's also very easy to understand why they need to be considerate of it and actually step up their obligation as well. This isn't an ask that, you know, President Trump is just making for domestic politics. This is one that actually needs to result in a stronger NATO relationship, because a stronger NATO alliance, because these other countries, I believe, will actually follow through in stepping up their commitment, which is the right thing.
All right, Congressman Zeldin, Bernie and Jill live on Long Island. I was in the Five Towns on Saturday at my friend Danielle and Ayala's house. Gorgeous, by the way. We know MS-13 is an issue. We know somewhere in Islip this morning, they're about to break up a couple of roads, eliminate, by the way, two roads in Islip. We know the Islanders are inching their way back towards Long Island. But what is a big issue locally for Congressman Zeldin on Long Island today?
Well, you're nailing the MS-13. That is that's certainly one of the biggest issues as far as quality of life.
Is that an everyday thing? Are you actually, doing something about that every single day?
It comes up for me almost every single day. It's something that impacts our ICE agents, our U.S. Attorney's Office, our local gang task force, our corrections officers in the detention facilities. For them, it is an all-day, everyday event. Now, for being a member of Congress, what's amazing is from 1 minute to the next, over the course of an hour, I could be working on four different topics that are important to my district and the country. So it's hugely important, and we have seen momentum go in the right direction. Earlier, you mentioned Rod Rosenstein and what happened with the DOJ indictment. Something that's really important to note, in my conversations with the local, with DOJ officials, with FBI officials, not just locally, but anywhere that I've spoken to these great men and women who take their oath seriously with these great agencies, and I ask them, how's morale? They say morale is great. Morale is going up because they're able to do their jobs again. They're able to bring these prosecutions where there was catch and release and someone might be coming across the border and maybe they have a murder in their past or they admit to being active with MS-13 or they're engaged in drug trafficking or sex trafficking and we just let them go into our country. That was what the policy was in the last administration, where there are all sorts of examples. Judicial Watch just released a whole bunch of documents as a result of a FOIA. Now what we're doing is tackling these quality of life issues. MS-13 is one, but I'm mentioning drug trafficking and the heroin opioid abuse epidemic, which is impacting lives, and so much more that, really, whether you're elected to be a town councilman or a school board member, to whether or not even if you're elected president of the United States, people care about being able to be safe in their home, for their kids to be safe in the school, to not just be able to raise a family on Long Island, but to afford to stay and be there for the remainder of your life. There's a lot that's important, but some of these issues that I mentioned, like MS-13 or the heroin opioid abuse epidemic, I mean, they're really at the top of the list.
Congressman Lee Zeldin, you're a smart guy, a great congressman, an Iraq war vet, for which we thank you.
Handsome guy, too, by the way. Good-looking kid.
I just want to ask you, Congressman Zeldin, have you hung out in Pete King's backyard any Saturday night in Seaford and gotten liquored up yet?
I haven't quite gotten that invite. That sounds like something I need to give him a hard time about. I've seen him crossing into the 1st Congressional District a few times. He used to ask me for visas to do it. Now he just does it. So I have to ask him about that one.
This is a big star.
The summer's early. Keep hope alive. You'll get the invite. Anyway, Congressman Lee Zeldin, we thank you for appearing on the Bernie and Sid Show. We really do.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Have a great morning, guys.
You're great.
You too.
Thank you. And on the way out, by the way, talking about Long Island, Joe Salamino reminds me, we talked the segment before, Lee Zeldin, 19 years ago today, JFK Jr. died. 37 years ago today on the LIE.
Harry Chapin.
Harry Chapin, very good.
We knew that.
We'll come back on the Bernie and Sid Show right after this.
Bernie and Sid in the morning. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Entertainment news.
I'm Juliette with your Royal Entertainment Roundup. Any compassion for Meghan Markle's supposedly camera-shy dad, Thomas, is pretty much out the window at this point. The self-described hermit is doing a lot less hermiting and a lot more yapping, giving yet another interview, this time to London's The Sun newspaper. And in it, he accuses the royal family of quashing his daughter's vivacious spirit, saying he's known Meghan all of her life and he can tell her ubiquitous smile is hiding misery. What's more, he said he was thinking about flying to England to confront the royals and his daughter. And he angrily ranted about the fact that he's called both her and the palace to no avail. Meantime, Duchess Meghan and her sister-in-law, Duchess Kate, were at Wimbledon's women's final over the weekend, their first solo outing. Sid, you were talking about how you saw...
A lot of FaceTime. Not just a Serena-Kerber match. They were there for the whole Nadal-Djokovic match all day Saturday. Now, she did not go back, I don't believe, Markle Sunday, but Prince William and Kate were there together.
Lots of cheering Meghan gave to her pal, Serena Williams. They've been friends for a while. Serena, by the way, giving a tearful speech after her loss. Here's a little bit of it.
There are mums everywhere that are saying, how has she done this? You are superhuman supermum.
No, I'm just me, and that's all I can be. But to all the moms out there, you know, I was playing free today, and I tried, but
You know, I mean, it was very sweet. Kind of like, yeah. I mean, she hasn't played a lot of matches, right?
No,
I don't really follow tennis, but she just has a baby, and all of a sudden
she barely played
there.
For months. She actually fell out of the Forbes 100 list for the first time in her career because she only made $18 million this year because she barely played.
Only. My kingdom for 18. Anyway, during that interview, the camera panned over to the Duchess, and you could see her kind of blinking away some tears. And if you watched the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan, you probably noticed a beautiful blonde woman in green who looks an awful lot like the late Princess Diana. Well, it turns out it is Diana's niece, Lady Kitty Spencer. She's the daughter of Diana's brother, Charles. The 27-year-old is considered one to look out for by fashionistas all around the world, and you can currently see her in ads and runway shows for designer Dolce & Gabbana. And finally, the internet is burning up with cuteness today. Kensington Palace releasing the official photos of newborn British Prince Louis's christening. He's, of course, the son, the second spare, of Duchess Kate and her husband Prince William, the heir to the throne after his dad Prince Charles. I'm Juliet. That's entertainment.
Oh, holy cow. That's 4.5. That may have hit the warehouse, and they announce it did. That may have damaged the warehouse.
Ken Griffey Jr. taking it back to the All-Star game in Baltimore, Camden Yards, 1993, winning the home run hitting contest the night before and hitting the warehouse. At Camden Yards, he had some great power. His days in Seattle and Cincinnati, the great Ken Griffey Jr. Tonight, of course, is the home run hitting contest. Major League Baseball, 8 guys go at it before the All-Star game tomorrow night in Washington, D.C. And this, of course, is Harry Chapin. We mentioned just moments ago, Bernie, that 37 years ago today on the LIE, he had that tragic and fatal car crash.
Yeah, that sucked.
It wasn't great.
Nah, the LIE.
Yeah, what happened? I didn't know about this. So he died on the LIE in an accident?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But aren't there better songs like...
this is his song.
No, this is the best
one. No, this is a good one.
Oh, you mean one of his songs?
Yes, what Harry Chapin like...
Taxi.
Taxi. Yeah, that's a great... That's my favorite.
This is his biggest hit by far.
I know.
By far.
But not for me.
Well, it may not be a favorite, but this is his biggest hit. It's like Don McLean with...
How about Leroy Brown?
Downtown Leroy Brown?
Wasn't that him?
He sings that?
Was that him? I don't know.
I think so.
I don't know. I know that you have some stuff to really emphasize what Lee Zeldin was talking about.
That was Jim Croce, by the way.
Jim Croce. And he died early.
Young guy, too.
Whatever the hell. Anyway,
and he sang a lot of very, very slow songs.
Before I get to what I have, to expand on what the congressman said, I'm looking at what Michael says from New Jersey. In fact, let's let him say it. Michael, you're on the Bernie and Sid Show. Good morning to you.
I'm so sick of watching people not work and it stands living great lives.
It's Sunday. Yesterday was Sunday, Mike.
Oh, my God. Shut up.
Okay, thanks for the call, moron. Shut up. Tell me to shut up. How about drive to Madison Square Garden, meet me out on 32nd and 7th, and tell me to shut up to my face, tough guy.
Before it got ugly. What the caption said that Jill typed up was, all those people at tennis match, get a job.
I got better news for you. Michael, why don't you get a job, moron? It was Sunday, Michael. It was Sunday.
Oh,
I know during the day, people do tend to take a day off. They'll do it at the U.S. Open. But when you have a good job and you're a valuable person, you're allowed to do stuff like that, which you, Michael, obviously can't do.
I think he was talking about the royal family.
Who cares? Who cares, an idiot? So anyway. Stupid to begin with. Go ahead. So what do you got from Zeldin and on Obama and Trump? Yeah, go to that.
You take it well. You take it very well.
Yeah, that's stupid. Tell me to shut up.
I mean...
Shut up. Michael from New Jersey, tough guy.
You know what?
Yeah.
Shut up, shutting up.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break.
Shut up. Let's do that.
And we'll come back and we'll talk more about Obama, Trump, Zeldin.
Just the difference, as Zeldin pointed out, between... this president and the one before is stark. And, this guy is the one we have now is standing up for us. The other guy was like, oh, I'm so sorry for this horrible country and what they did to the globe.
Oh, the worst.
And,
I told you, he used to hate it after like a terrorist attack. He would come on, Obama, and I'd hate him.
I would hate him.
And he never said it was Islamic terror.
No, ever. Of course he never did that.
No. It was always, let's not overreact to, these 50 people dead.
Yeah. But I do, I hearken back to when Trump won and he was the president-elect. And Obama, of course, was still the president. And Trump and Melania went to D.C. to meet with Obama and Michelle. And they got along so nicely, remember? They were shaking hands.
Yeah, they're civil. Yeah, sure.
No, they're nice. Civil. Trump hates his guts. He had tweeted about him again this weekend. Civil. Obama hates him more. I think Obama hates Trump even more than Trump hates Obama.
But they're relatively civil.
And then Michelle came out a week after that meeting and was these people are real lowlives. These people are lowlifes.
But no, Obama would never tweet what Hillary tweeted today, yesterday, which was after Trump tweeted congratulations to the French soccer team. She said to Trump, she said congratulations too. She said, "Does President Trump know what team he's playing for in regards to the Trump Putin summit?" Anyway, we'll get back into it.
But Obama wouldn't say that because he won twice. So
no, because
he's not bitter.
He's not quite as hateful
because he won. But she lost, she's bitter.
She's just a nasty woman.
That too. We'll come right back right after these words.
Does she have a fat ass? Absolutely.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Back here on the Bernie and Sid Show, there he is, Jim Croce. Did you happen to look up why he died, Jilly?
I'm still going to do that right now.
Let's go to Deborah from Maplewood, New Jersey, the great Jim Croce. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning.
What's up?
Listen, are you guys supposed to know what team Trump is playing for?
Deborah, you sound like you're in a trunk. You sound like you're in the trunk of a car. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, now try it again. Let's see if we can understand you.
I said, are you guys sure you know what team Trump is playing for with his children and his wife?
What does that mean, his children and his wife?
Whatever. He's doing.
No. Deborah, not whatever, sweetheart. If you have an opinion about Donald Trump, whatever's not going to work. So what is your issue?
My opinion is Donald Trump is going to have us living like those people live in Russia.
Let me ask you a question. Hey, Deborah, let me ask you a question. You're a woman, obviously, right?
Yes.
Okay. What has Donald Trump done wrong so far here by women, by African-Americans, by anyway? What has he done wrong?
The judge that he's appointing and the rights he's going to take away from me as a woman and as a black woman. They are busy at work. Sessions has waited all his life to do what he's doing to the black people and the brown.
What are they doing? What are they doing? Because I could tell you, Deborah. Deborah, he's done nothing. All he's done is improve the situation. African American people like you, Deborah, were not doing nearly as well financially in jobs. With the last president who was black. So instead of just coming on like a lot of my African American friends who hate Trump but don't know why, you are not really able to tell us why you hate him.
Tell you exactly why.
Why?
He's taking away the vote. Right. They're making it harder and harder for us to vote.
You don't really believe that, do you?
You really believe that?
I really believe it because I've seen it in writing and in numbers.
Wow. Okay? You see, Deborah,
they're creating that we can't.
You
vote
happen to be part of.
She saw it on CNN.
You saw it on CNN. You happen to be part of the ignorant masses out there that you're totally, completely wrong.
Completely wrong.
It's sad, and you're filled with hate because of ignorance. And I'm not insulting you. I'm describing you. I mean, it's sad. He's going to take away your. He's going to turn us into Russia, like Putin has done to his people.
Now, look, he is going to appoint a conservative judge. We've talked about that. So if you are, in fact, a woman, you're nervous about Planned Parenthood, which I do believe does more good than bad. I really do. And I am pro-choice. So, Deborah, I'm on your side there. But as we pointed out, specifically Bernard on this show many, many times, if you live in a state, a blue state like New York, and Donald Trump allows the states to make those decisions, then abortions are not going to get they're not going to go away here. So what? I swear to God, there's nothing racist about this, but so many of my African American friends who hate Donald Trump have no idea why. They see Sharpton on MSNBC. Their friends and relatives hate him, so they hate him. But just like you, Deborah, just now, they're not able to articulate why. Because the fact is, everything you said is wrong. It's just, and I don't love Donald Trump, but it's wrong.
It's ignorance and it's false emotion. It's just based in ignorance is what it is. You know, and I'm not trying to be insulting. I'm not trying to be pejorative. I'm just trying to be descriptive.
I sat down with my daughter's friend, her best friend in school. Her parents are lovely people. They live in Brooklyn. They're both psychologists, and they hate Donald Trump. And even though Danielle warned me not to do it, we go for dinner. Don't talk politics. And, of course, I brought it up. I said, listen, just so you guys know, kind of like Trump. Don't love him, but like him. Can we still be friends? And the husband said to me, you kind of like Trump. What do you like about him? I said, well, here's what I like. I'm a Jew. I like the fact that he doesn't give Hamas money, and he moved the capital to Jerusalem. I said, I kind of like the fact the economy is doing very, very well, and the stock market is doing very well. Kind of like the fact that the caliphate and ISIS has pretty much been destroyed. I kind of like the fact he doesn't give North Korea money. Instead, he tells Kim Jong, eliminate this before you eliminate you. I kind of like the fact he doesn't have stupid deals, whether it's the Paris Accord or NAFTA, these trade deals, where we, in effect, pay for all of Europe. I kind of like the fact that the Iran deal, maybe the worst in history, he basically has ripped up. You want me to keep going?
Two more. Secure borders. Secure borders and the not being a nation of suckers any longer with regards to NATO and those types of things. That, and that's just recent. So there's a whole litany of things. I can't think of many negative things that he's done policy-wise.
Either can I. It's easy to hate on him for some of the things he says, and I've been there. I was there through the whole campaign. But I list like 10 things, 10 tangible policies that he has done a very good job with. And do you think after that there was an argument? It was, can you pass the calamari? I swear to God. I swear to God. He goes, can you pass the calamari? And we were done.
In other words, he couldn't.
We were done.
There was no rebuttal.
Of course not.
Because they have no rebuttal. It's all emotion. It's not fact. It's not logic. It's emotion. Ignorance and emotion.
And they sound stupid. And they sound angry.
Petty. Petulant.
And guess what?
And
it's going to continue
bitter.
When Trump wins again in 2020.
And or in 2018, I must tell you. It's not going to be any blue wave. But listen, this was Obama, essentially. This was him early on in his administration. His worldview of, well, what America has done in the past.
In America, there's a failure to appreciate Europe's leading role in the world. There have been times where America has shown arrogance and been dismissive. Even derisive. The United States is still working through some of our own darker periods in our history. The United States will be willing to acknowledge past errors where those errors have been made. We've at times been disengaged, and at times we've sought to dictate our terms.
So America's a bully, and we're just bad people. Now, this is Trump in NATO last week. We're not going to be the United Suckers of America any longer. I'm standing up for my country.
Many countries are not paying what they should. And frankly, many countries owe us a tremendous amount of money for many years back. We're protecting all of these countries. And then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia, where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia, and I think that's very inappropriate. And Germany will have almost 70% of their country controlled by Russia with natural gas. On top of that, Germany is just paying a little bit over 1%, whereas the United States, in actual numbers, is paying 4.2% of a much larger GDP. So I think that's inappropriate also. This has been brought up by other presidents, but other presidents never did anything about it because I don't think they understood it or they just didn't want to get involved. But I have to bring it up because I think it's very unfair to our country. It's very unfair to our taxpayer.
I mean, how can you argue with any of that, standing up for the American people.
You can't. Ivan is on Staten Island, line one. Let's get to Ivan. Ivan, how are you? Your phone is terrible. Thank you.
Richie from the Bronx. Yeah. You're on the Bernie and Sid Show. Good morning to you, Richie.
Hey, you guys. I'm African-American. I love Donald Trump. Now, a lot of people may not like what he says, but I'm a results-oriented person.
That was me. I didn't like what he said. That's why I didn't vote for him. But I'm able to say he's doing a good job because the results have been good.
Exactly. And as an African-American...
I must say, I liked America First, and I liked a lot of what he said. I mean, maybe the way he said things was a little rough around the edges, but it's what we needed at a crucial time.
I think, unfortunately, African-Americans are still buying the same used car that the Democrats have been trying to sell us for decades. And we've got to stop. You have to look at results. Forget about the man's race. Forget about his party affiliation. What about results? And if people actually look at results and forget about all this divisive crap, whether you're black, white, purple, orange, I don't care if the man is a Martian. He's getting good results.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Americans should look at. Right, we got a break here. But you talk about divisive crap. But let's be honest. Again, as I mentioned to Deborah, in terms of the economy, financially, African Americans have more jobs and are doing better now than under Obama. And when did Black Lives Matter start? Under Obama. All we talked about was how is it possible that we have a black president and yet the racial divide in this country
we had riots.
Is reminiscent of 1960s. Exactly. So the idea that all of a sudden Trump is, hey, the race, the riots, the issues of Black Lives Matter, cops getting gunned down in the street, that was all Barack Obama. I have to remind my African-American friends sometimes. Not Trump. Barack Obama.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
The home run derby brackets are out. And
yes.
So we're going to take a look. We've got a lot of heavy hitters in it. And so in round one, you got the defending champ, Giancarlo Stanton.
I'm going upset in the first round right there.
Wow.
8-1.
Guess what, Lobo? You would have been matched up with Giancarlo.
I'm going 8-1, Fran.
Wow. Moustakas and Sano, that's a good 4-5 matchup down
5-4.
Judge and Boer.
2-7.
Well, Boer's going to have his work cut out. But it's the home park for Boer. So don't
2-7.
And then Cody Bellinger and Charlie Blackman.
Chill, I love you to death, but you really are a moron. He's giving us a home running contest from Miami like 5 years ago. Justin Bohr, the home guy. The home guy tonight is Bryce Harper in Washington, D.C., but she meant well.
Yeah.
Listen, the Trump-Putin little meeting is over. We're awaiting a joint news conference. We'll have all of that for you. But we'll take a quick break for a couple of seconds, catch our breath, and move from Helsinki to Washington, D.C., where tomorrow, of course, is the All-Star Game. C.J. Nedkowski, local guy, pitched at St. John's, pitched on a bunch of Major League clubs, including both locally with the Mets and the Yankees, now does a terrific job on Fox, also does 100 Texas Ranger baseball games a year, does a terrific baseball show on XM Sirius. New York kid made good for himself, making his debut on the Bernie and Sid Show. Our good friend C.J. Nedkowski. Good morning, C.J. How are you?
Sid, good morning, man. Thanks for having me, and congrats on the show, man.
Thank you. Yeah, me and Bernie are killing it, and we're enjoying it very, very much. Hey, let's get to tonight's big competition, the home run hitting contest, round one, Hoskins versus Aguiar, Freeman versus Harper, Schwarber versus Bregman, and Baez versus the Dodger stud, Max Muncy. None of the big names not here. No Aaron Judge, no Stanton. Really, outside of Harper, no real big name. Good players, some great young kids. But what do you think that means to the contest later on tonight?
Yeah, I mean, Rob Manfred, the commissioner, definitely doesn't love that guys will take this off. You can't blame them. I mean, you know, baseball schedule is such a grind, 162 games. They added four more off days in this year to try to help guys a little bit. But, you know, so many guys look forward to either taking that time off or just not taking 3 hours to try to see how far you can hit baseballs. You know, I mean, obviously that's such a big problem in the game anyway with so many swings and misses and strikeouts and everything else. And there's just some guys that don't enjoy doing it, at least not for the length of time that it takes. That's been part of the problem is how long it can end up taking. So it's unfortunate that we're not going to see the biggest names and guys that can absolutely launch. We have Joey Gallo with the Rangers, who's having a little bit of a rough year, but he can hit the ball as far as anybody.
It reminds me a little bit of the slam dunk contest. Way back when, as you know, CJ, we had the Michael Jordans, the Julius Irvings, the Dominique Wilkins. Now we have, like, bench players on the Knicks. same thing with home runs. I mean, you know, the guys can do it. I mean, Aguiar's got 24 home runs. He leads the league, but –
his name is not Stanton. So kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it is. Kyle Schwarber, I think, will be a fun one. This guy's got some pretty big pop. And as you mentioned, Bryce Harper is the biggest name. It'll probably be best for the event if he can win it at home in D.C. That'll give it the attention it deserves. If he gets knocked out early by Freddie Freeman, it may not be that great.
C.J. Burney here. Listen, the Mets, Jacob deGrom, the best pitcher in the National League. I feel so bad for this guy, stuck with a bad team. I mean, you know, the numbers, the win-loss numbers aren't so great, obviously, but everything else is just fantastic. The guy's wonderful. Now, he should be starting tomorrow night, but I understand that the National League, they're going to go with the Nats local guy, Max Scherzer. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's kind of the way that it goes. I mean, that's not that uncommon if you get that opportunity to. Now that this game doesn't matter as much, you know, we used to do that deal with Fox, it would matter for home field advantage for the World Series. Now that it is strictly about showcasing your sport, I get it. I mean, Jacob deGrom's had a great year. Max Scherzer's having a monster year, probably going to win the Cy Young Award again. And so anytime you got a chance to do that in his home ballpark, I think you do it. And I don't think deGrom cares that much anyway. I mean, he's having a huge year. He's such a good kid. And he's having a huge year where he's not getting the support, as you mentioned. And why not, I guess, let that continue? Just in the way it seems like not everything is quite going.
Yeah, no. I remember Bruce Bochy did it years ago for Matt Harvey when he was starting in Queens over Lincecum, his own guy with the Giants. Talking about what Bernie was just talking about, DeGrom, who was having the best year, and he won't win the Cy Young because he's going to win about five games. But all the talk here, I know you spend a lot of time here and in Texas, CJ, is about the Mets. You know, they end the first half in dismal fashion. Another loss yesterday to Washington.
But they took two out of three.
They did. But they need athletes. They need better players. And to get better players, you got to ship out your good players. And Met fans somewhat concerned that may include DeGrom, Syndergaard. Do you think eventually the new trio in power would deal one of those guys?
They're listening. I don't know if they're going to do it. It's such a tough decision to make. But you're right. The reality is right now, the way that Jacob deGrom is throwing, I'm not sure you're going to get him any better than he is right now. And you still have two more years of control. That's the important part, right? You want to haul for a guy, he's got to be a controllable player. And so any team that would acquire Jacob deGrom right now is going to get three runs at a postseason with him the rest of this year and then the next two. The question the Mets have to be honest with themselves about is, do we have a playoff run in us over these next couple of years, and would we regret trading Jacob deGrom? You absolutely take those phone calls, you listen, and if someone's going to blow your doors off, you do it. I mean, you saw Andrew Miller had 3 years of control when he was traded, and you saw the return there and how the Yankees did on that one, ultimately get themselves Clint Frazier, a couple other guys. It's that kind of big haul that it takes. It's unfortunate that the Yankees probably could put together the biggest package, which makes things, you know, just a little bit dicier. Brian Cashman's done such a great job with the prospects that they have and prospects that other teams want to get their hands on. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger, though. I think ultimately they get a little gun-shy with it, and the idea of watching him put on a different uniform right now doesn't happen. Maybe some smaller trades. You know, maybe Zach Wheeler, his name has been out there, 2 years of control on him. He doesn't cost as much, but I don't think they do DeGrom. Although, if I were them, I probably would.
C.J. Nitkowski, speaking of the New York Yankees, do you think that they would trade away for Manny Machado from the Baltimore Orioles, or is it more about pitching with the Yankees?
For me, it has to be pitching, right? You look at that lineup, you can survive missing a little bit in that lineup. I don't think you can win in the postseason with that current rotation. You're just asking a lot of those guys. Unless Sonny Gray all of a sudden starts pitching like he did, you know, last time out, and all of a sudden out of nowhere he becomes the old Sonny Gray. That's been a big problem for the Yankees. And listen, they got to figure out, you know, the big thing too is, can they figure out a way to get past the Boston Red Sox? The only way they do that is by strengthening their rotation, because the idea of going to a wild card game, even though it's going to be Luis Severino who likely takes the ball, is a scary thought, man, because anything could happen. This team could win 100 games and get sent home after a wild card game. And even though the rest of the American League is not that strong, that's just a chance you don't want to take.
It is amazing you're making that point about they can win 100 games and have to play one game to advance in the playoffs. I mean, look, we knew the Yankees would be really, really good, CJ, and they are, in fact, really, really good. But I don't care who you are. I mean, nobody could have expected the Red Sox. They never lose, CJ. They never lose.
We were just there, man, and they waxed us for three games up in Boston. That lineup is so good. And it's relentless. And you run into the same thing with the Yankees, right? The bottom of that lineup will beat you. For some reason, the top's having, you know, an off day, which doesn't happen very often anyway. And so it's a deep lineup, and then you look at the starters, and there's a lot of hardware in that rotation, and Chris Sale's the one that doesn't have any, and this dude is unbelievable. Now, he ran out of gas last year. He was great for them, but he was bad in the postseason. And so they're trying to keep an eye on his innings a little bit, trying to manage him a little bit better, but it's the depth of that rotation that crushes you, and they're going to go out and get another arm in the bullpen. They've had some guys that are having some bumps in the road, but they don't have a guy that throws under 95 miles an hour in their bullpen. It's unbelievable. And so they're real deep. Their weaknesses, they don't have the big lefty you're looking for. And actually, we were just there, and we got a guy in Jake Diekman who's 95 to 97, who struck out the side in the game right in front of Dave Dombrowski, and it wouldn't surprise me if he starts making that phone call and trying to get a hold of him. But they're pretty deep, man. They could use, maybe if they were to upgrade somewhere at catcher right now, that's a little bit of an issue they're having. That's a tough thing to do in the middle of the season. I think they had a couple of arms that need to get a little bit bigger and a little bit better before the deadline's over.
CJ Nitkowski, listen, let me ask you about the St. Louis Cardinals. They just booted their manager. Do you think ex-Yankee Joe Girardi be a good fit there?
So it's interesting, right, because they're kind of similar. Mike Matheny gets fired. Mike Matheny is a guy that is pretty well-respected within the game, but he's got that old-school kind of mentality.
Both catchers, by the way, both catchers.
Yep, a couple of catchers, which, is not uncommon in the game. I was somewhere around, I want to say maybe about 15 of the current managers or former catchers. So that part's not uncommon. But Girardi, it comes kind of from the same mold. Or you can say Matheny comes from the same mold of Girardi. And I was really disappointed that the Yankees fired Girardi. I really like him. I respect him. I think he's a great manager.
Yeah, me too.
But it's all about the relationship stuff. That's what you kept hearing, right? They said even if they won the World Series, they were going to fire him, which I don't believe for a second.
No.
But that's what they said. And they kept going back to relationships with younger players. And part of the reason Mike Matheny was fired, I think, that besides the fact that the Cardinals were underperforming pretty significantly, was that they were trying to get away from some of this old school stuff. And he made a comment in the Athletic about some things that were going on with rookies and veterans and yada yada. And the Cardinals felt like it felt too old school. And so that's the only reason I worry about Joe Girardi, who I think would be great. I think he'd be a great fit, and he does seem like he be perfect in that Cardinals uniform. But if they're serious about wanting to do something a little bit younger where relationships of players matter more, then Carlos Beltran for me looks like a better fit.
Or Dusty Baker. The players love Dusty Baker too.
Yeah.
Maybe Girardi will start tweeting or something. Right. See, I'm cool.
With emojis.
Right. Hey, by the way, CJ, even though Bernie and I are in New York and we're Met fans, we don't really have a lot of allegiance towards the Texas Rangers. Although we love you to death. At least once a week, though, we root for Texas when Bartolo Colon is on the mound.
But this guy has been unbelievable, man. We're the same age. I'm like 2 months older than him. And I haven't played baseball, it feels like a decade. And this guy is still out there. Out there, but he's still doing it. I mean, he was unbelievable. We had a series against the Tigers, who were terrible. But he threw a complete game. It was a loss, so it was eight innings. But he just rolls. And okay. I'm convinced, and I've told our manager, I said, can we please put a heart rate monitor on this guy? Because it doesn't matter if the bases are loaded and there's no outs, or he just struck out the side. He is exactly the same all the time. Never too high, never too low. His teammates love him. And you know what it is? He's a sneaky good athlete, too, man. Don't be fooled by that body.
Absolutely.
He's got good hands.
We watched him here in New York, and you're absolutely right. And he has a good time. That's what you love about the guy. He's a great time while he's out in the field. Listen, CJ, last question. The All-Star game tomorrow night. In the past, you've seen where players, they play the first two or three innings or whatever, and before the game is over, they're on a jet flying home. I mean, what kind of teamwork is that? I mean, when that happens, is that going to happen tomorrow, or do they make them now stay till the ninth inning?
It could. And it's so different, right? Go back, I don't know, 20 or 30 years when the leagues genuinely disliked each other and guys played almost the whole game and Pete Rose was barreling guys over and, it was a legit game that both teams wanted to win. That has changed. It's a showcase, and guys want to take advantage of their vacation time. And so if they want to play, a couple innings Tuesday, make sure wherever they want to spend their next couple of off days, which you just don't get consecutive days in our sport ever, it could be the case where a couple try to sneak out. As long as you know you're not going to be the MVP, it'll probably still keep happening, which, it's a different kind of deal. It's not what it used to be. And it seems like the league's okay with
it. Now, listen, when I was a kid, the only time outside the Mayor's Trophy game, I got a chance to see a Met go up against a Yankee, Lee Mazzilli up against Ron Guidry, or Darryl Strawberry up against, Roger Clemens, was at the All-Star game. Now, with interleague play, that's all gone. So for me as a kid, it was like, oh, my God, that's Lee Mazzilli up against Ron Guidry.
Those days are over. Hey,
we're just talking about, man. For me, interleague play has probably got to go away. It's run
its enough.
It's kind of made the World Series not the same, and it's made the All-Star game not the
Couldn't agree more. Hey, you're great. We're happy for your success. Again, Texas Ranger Baseball, Fox National Baseball, XM Sirius Baseball Show in the morning, and you're terrific, CJ. Keep coming back. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, man.
My pleasure, guys. Congrats on the show again.
Thank you, buddy. Yeah. CJ Nitkowski, former St. John star, New York Met, New York Yankee, now kicking ass on the broadcast. I will take a short break. More of Bernie and Sid right after this.
Bernie and Sid in the morning. Bernie and Sid in the morning. Entertainment news now.
Hello, I'm Juliet with your entertainment report. No, Pamela Anderson is not dating WikiLeaks embattled founder Julian Assange. How do we know that? Because she's reportedly engaged to another guy. The former Baywatch babe and pinup was seen in Russia over the weekend, cheering on her boyfriend, 32-year-old Adil Rami, who happens to be a superstar soccer player for the championship French World Cup team. Some pictures of Anderson taken at Sunday's match show her sporting a very big, very sparkly ring on her left hand. The two reportedly met at the Grand Prix in Monaco back in 2017. She is 18 years older than her beau. He reportedly calls her alien because she looks so great for her age. If they do walk down the aisle, it'll be her fifth marriage and fourth husband after rockers Tommy Lee, Kid Rock,
He's
and Rick Solomon.
He's a 32-year-old soccer star.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he need that?
What does he need?
She's been married four or five times. She's 20 years
old. I'm married four times.
She's 20
Doesn't
years,
mean that
she's
20 I'm lesser years, of
20,
a human.
She's 20 years older
so
than
what?
Him. I don't know. I just
she's hot. I mean, she's she's intelligent.
Plenty of 20-somethings that are hot. You make a very good point.
Foreigners,
I withdraw the comment.
Europeans, they do things differently. They older men, younger men like older women. Look at Macron.
Macron is married. He married his grandma.
Sacrebleu! I cheer these ladies on. You kidding me? And I forgot that she was married to Rick Solomon twice. She divorced him. And then she married him again a couple years later. I didn't remember that. Anyway, speaking of rockers, Travis Barker was involved in a scary car crash on Friday. It was so bad, the Blink-182 drummer's son, who was also in the wreck, said that they are truly lucky to be alive. They were driving along in Calabasas, California, which is a suburb north of Los Angeles, when their car was hit by a school bus really hard, totaling the car. But again, they are all okay. I'm Juliet. That's entertainment.
All right, thanks, Jules. 9:31, your Monday morning home run hitting contest tonight for sports fans. This is the quietest week for sports, by the way, because you got the All-Star game tomorrow. Wednesday of this week, I believe, is the only day of the year where there's no sports. There's nothing.
Wow.
Thursday, you get one baseball game back, the Cubs and Cardinals. And then baseball season really resumes on Friday, and it's a big one locally here with the Mets and Yanks.
The British Open starts on Thursday.
Very good, and we want to see what's going on with Phil Mickelson. But Carnoustie, he seems like he's kind of falling apart here mentally. He's doing some crazy things.
Well, he did that one crazy. He lost his temper for, half a minute.
Two crazy things.
What happened?
The U.S. Open, he had the thing with the putt
twice.
Right, and then he went crazy again last week Briar Green, or Greenbrier, whatever. I don't know what it's
whatever
called.
The hell.
He did something else crazy.
What?
What did he do? He, son of a gun.
On the course?
On the course.
Was he running around in his underwear?
Something like that. Took his shirt off or something. Yeah. Something crazy. So he's had like two meltdowns over the last 3 weeks.
Hmm. He's making these commercials with his daughter.
Yeah.
You know, where they're doing stuff in the house and he looks like the most normal guy in the world.
He was that guy.
And he's losing his mind.
Yeah. I mean, Amy, his beautiful wife, and she's a cancer survivor, and his family. And you may even remember he was going to skip a golf tournament last year to be with his daughter at her graduation.
Yeah.
So he's that guy, but lately he's been falling apart a bit.
I got it here, Sydney.
What is it?
He was given a 2-stroke penalty for tapping down the grass to improve his line of play.
Right. He cheated again.
Cheated.
Come on, Philly.
But that's right. That does happen on Thursday morning. So Wednesday's the only day. Home run hitting contest tonight. All-star game tomorrow night. Nothing to watch Wednesday.
Nope. I happen to know Wednesday.
New York Liberty?
Nope. There's a huge cockfight. up in the Bronx.
There was a huge cockfight just now in Helsinki. Not sure it was a fight, though. It went longer than expected. Somewhere between 90 minutes and 2 hours. And now Trump and Putin are done. Putin, I should say. Putin. They're done.
Did they have the press conference already?
They have not. Okay. Well, let's hope we all can get along now.
I think they got along before, to be honest.
You know what? The fact that they got along, people will say, well, I told you. Yeah,
collusion.
They're in cahoots. Yeah.
Right.
But if it doesn't go well, people would rather see Trump impeached than tensions reduced.
Of course.
They would rather see nuclear war.
Of course.
Than, they would rather see Trump impeached, I should say, at the risk of nuclear war.
They would rather see the stock market crash than the economy do well under Donald Trump. There's no question.
Absolutely.
They are willing to forego this country.
No, even worse, though, they would rather have war.
Yeah.
Than Trump succeeding with a bad guy.
That's part
by reducing tensions.
And that's when you really dig in. You've made that point clear. But even a guy like me that is not nearly as supportive of Trump as you are, that's where even I get upset. That's when even I start to say, come on. Donald Trump, our relationship with Russia has never been worse thanks to many years of U.S. foolishness and up with the witch hunt. So he's talking about that on his Twitter this morning.
Yes, he should. Now, what they're doing when he calls it a witch hunt, they're saying it's not a witch hunt. Look, they just indicted 12 Russians. He's talking about the political act, the Russian collusion, the fact that he colluded with. Yes, the Russians probably tried to intervene in the election, tried to meddle. He didn't collude or conspire with them. No, that's the witch hunt that he's talking about.
Enough of this already.
They want to imply that, that's what he's talking about.
God, please. You know what? I say this for one day yesterday when I walked past Café du Soleil and the French were playing the Croatians. It was, with these sporting events, you do see a lot of love. You know, whether it's a South African Kevin Anderson playing a Serbian guy in Djokovic. Sports is where these countries do seem to come together, and unless it's
that's the English hooligans,
Germany
beating up the German soccer fans.
I'm just telling you, there was actually a young girl yesterday who was serving food at the Café du Soleil. She was all excited when France scored a goal, and she blew the vuvuzela.
She blew who?
Half the patrons. Afterwards. But you had to see them blowing this thing in the streets, and they got the flags painted on their face, and
it's a beautiful thing.
It was.
How about Brandon from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Sydney? Brandon from all the way across the country, calling into a New York morning radio show. We love you, Brandon. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Bernie, and good morning, Mr. Sid. Good to have you back, Sid.
Thank you, pal.
Miss you, brother.
Thank you.
And good to have the dynamic. Good to have the dynamic duo back again.
Thank you.
But I'm just saying that it's hard to be a Sanchez. My name is Brandon Sanchez from Albuquerque, because people are telling me, that Donald Trump wants to deport me just because of my last name. You know, my history, my family came from Spain. You know, we were Spaniards that came over. And they want to tell me that I'm going to get deported. You know, it's just blind hatred. And these are people that I went to school with all my life, So.
Yeah.
It's just blind hatred, like you're talking about earlier, that I can't
stand.
It
is, but I mean, are they stupid, or are they just hateful?
A little bit of both.
Both, exactly, because they're family, too, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's the stupid part. They're family that are telling me they want to deport me, and they have the same last name as me.
That's hard to believe.
Bunch of morons.
Local.
So you guys have a great day.
You too, Brandon.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks for the call.
See, he says Spain, I think of Nadal. I'm telling you, this whole international sports country thing, it's got me going. It's going to go away now.
You're a globalist.
I am, to a certain extent. I mean, I appreciate what Donald Trump is doing with making America first.
However, a World Cup, soccer, and tennis turns people into nationalists.
They do. They definitely do.
So which is it?
You can't be both? You can't be both, I guess, right? You really can't. I'm serious. If you have a Republican...
Well, I don't know how you can be.
Well, let me ask you this. You have a Republican, you have a Democrat. The guy down the middle is, I guess, like an independent, okay?
Yeah.
So is there a term for somebody who, during a sporting event, is a globalist, but also appreciates his leader making their country first? Is there a term? But I know the term. Crazy.
Yes.
That's me.
Inconsistent.
There you go. That's me.
On the Bernie Sid Show. You just want everybody to get along. There's nothing wrong with that.
I just think when it comes to sports, we should be able to do that, and we do for the most part outside of Munich in the Olympics and some other spots.
Yeah.
But I do think it's important for our leader to make sure we come first.
The Eagles and the Phillies.
That's true, too.
We get along for the most part.
We're coming right back, folks.
Bernie and Sid in the morning.
Hi, this is Keith Hernandez, and you're listening to Bernie and Sid.
Our boy Keith, by the way, was taken off the Fox team for the World Series this year. Not invited back.
No, he wasn't. Sadly.
Yeah.
That had a sting. He was the only one.
He was the only one. Even David Ortiz is back. I thought he was terrible.
Poppy!
Yeah, the you heard there, the Bill O'Reilly is in that rejoin, mentioning our names. And we both received the new book, The Killing of the ESS, from Bill this weekend. And both were very nice, handwritten, personalized notes.
Yes, very, very sweet. Very nice. Nice touch.
Yes, I thought so.
The book is... did you already
mention the SS?
Killing of the SS, yes. About the Nazis who escaped and the people who tracked them down. Heinrich Himmler and Adolf Eichmann and the rest of these guys.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Himmler didn't escape. It was...
I don't think he did.
Right. They got Himmler early on. It was Adolf Eichmann. It was Mengele. Joseph Mengele.
Right. He did.
Those guys went to South... Anyway, it's all about that. But what I liked about the book, which is very good, I started reading it already, not surprisingly. He dedicates it to his son, Spencer, who likes history just as much as I do.
Oh, cool.
I thought that was very...
That is nice. Well, I'm sure he's going to come on next couple of weeks.
Very poignant.
Yeah. He'll come on the next couple of weeks and talk about the book, and we'll do his show.
Well, it's September.
Okay.
The book release is September.
Oh, really? So we got it way in advance.
So you have plenty of time to read it.
Okay. Plenty of time for the Monarch notes to come out. What I used to get, Monarch notes? There was a second thing.
Cliff notes.
Thank you.
Oh, I love Cliff notes.
Cliff notes, Monarch notes. The Monarch was red,
Cliff was yellow.
Yellow, right.
I remember when I was going to high school, and we took a literary course at Kingsborough to get college credit in high school. Me and my hoodlum buddies, Yitzi and all the guys in high school, and we'd go to Kingsborough. And I remember in that literary class, we had to read, Heathcliff was the protagonist. Very famous book.
Isn't that a cartoon?
No, come on.
It was a cartoon.
Heathcliff.
He was
the protagonist. Very, very famous book. Son of a gun. Very famous.
You know what I'm going to do?
And they actually said day one, they go, and don't you read the Monarch
books? Wuthering Heights.
Thank you.
How'd you know that?
Very good, Jill. How did you think she knew that?
And they made sure we didn't do the Monarch notes or the Cliff notes. We read the book.
That's good.
It was not good. I wanted to kill myself.
Oh, you know, well, maybe Wuthering Heights wasn't the best book to grab your attention.
No.
I mean, and that's the thing. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a summer reading list. For everybody, and I'll tell you why.
I love that.
I'll tell you. See,
Matt hate that.
But listen, I'll tell you why.
Right.
Because I want somebody who's, by trial and error, have read books and said, man, I wasted my time with that. Or, wow, that was a great one. I always wanted somebody to tell me.
Right.
So I didn't have to waste my time with boring books. Well, I can narrow it down to 10 books, 10 great books that you'll read and you'll like.
It's funny you do that because as an avid reader, I would think you wouldn't care. In other words, I love going to the movies. So if I see a film critic, even one I like Rex Reed, kill a movie, that won't stop me from going to the movie if I think I'm going to like it. Because I'm an avid moviegoer, I want to judge it by myself. But you're telling me that...
If you like me and my sensibilities,
right.
and I'm telling you, I'm a reader who likes to read. I enjoy reading, especially if the book is good. Now, and if the book is not good, for example, I'll plow through it because I just... sheer determination, I'm finishing this damn book.
You got to do it.
I'll give you an example. Herman Melville's Moby Dick. It is the worst piece of crap, garbage. But yet, when people hear Moby Dick, oh, yeah,
even
great
the,
adventure
even
book.
The movie board
of the sea. Oh, yeah, it's great.
I know
well, you would think. I mean, the whale boat, the captain, the Ahab, he knocks the boat over.
He's going to track him down.
It's awful.
It's got to be awful.
Well, a lot of
people. Did you read the Iliad?
A lot of people don't think that.
The Iliad or the Odyssey, like 18,000 pages. Did you read those books?
No, I started and stopped.
You did?
Okay. Yeah.
Right, because Homer, you got to stop.
No, I agree.
Too much.
It is too much.
Another one is The Count of Monte Cristo.
Now, that's great. God. That's very, very good.
But it's super long.
Well, now, there's two versions. If you read the super long version, you're screwing yourself.
Yes.
Manny, you want to read...
I've started it.
You want to read a good book. It's like 200-something pages.
and it's really easy to read. You're wrong and you're ugly.
Yes,
by Sid Rosenberg.
I'll still wait for a copy.
Listen,
it's easy. It's fun. You hit more your favorite people.
My favorite book.
Listen to this before you move on. The Count of Monte Cristo was written also by a guy. It was written by a guy named Alexandre Dumas.
Dumas,
who also wrote the Three Musketeers.
Yes,
those are two great fun books. As long
movie.
As you read the shortened version, you don't read
too
the long version.
Just see the movie.
Just see the movie.
Steve Martin,
yes.
Martin Short, and Chevy Chase.
Well, that's said by two non-readers who don't appreciate, don't understand.
I read The Da Vinci Code, and that's my favorite book from this till this day.
I remember what Bernie just said when I went to Poly Prep. Arthur Idahl, I know you're listening. And that was their thing. They would, you know, you'd go home for the summer, and they'd give you a reading list, and you also had to do book reports. So they made sure you read it.
I don't trust the reading list. I don't trust what the schools. I know they gave my kids reading lists. I'm like, why are you giving the kid this book? They're not going to get into this stupid thing.
No, they gave us a choice. We could read what we want to read, plus their suggestions. But you had to do a book report to make sure that you actually read the book. I had to come back with written work.
Well, somebody should say, look, I'm going to give you a book that's going to make this kid want to read another book.
You know, the last time that happened with me, I loved Catcher in the Rye. I like sports books. I'll read sports books all day. I love them. But, like, when I remember my father and my mother, I failed the book report. I'll never forget this. I failed it because I just didn't do it. And it was Jack London. And I can't remember if it was White Fang or Call of the Wild. But I read, like, 50 pages about a bunch of dogs dragging a sled. And I'm like, are you nuts? I'm not going to read this.
No way.
But wait, Jack London is a genius. Call of the Wild, White Fang. I mean,
well, listen, you may not have given it a chance.
No,
you may not have.
The Help was really good too. I read that.
Which one?
The Help.
Who wrote that?
It was a movie, but I don't remember. But Oprah recommended it.
Oh, the Jack London book that I read was The Seawolf. Excellent.
I didn't read that one.
Very good.
I stopped to Call of the Wild and the White Fang. I had enough. I had enough.
In fact, reading The Seawolf made me want to read, and I never read these things as a kid. I never read a book until I was 18 years old.
Really?
And then I read The Guns of Navarone. That's the first
Come
book
on.
I never read a book.
You didn't read Charlotte's Web when you were a kid?
I cheated my way through school, through high school, reading Cliff Notes.
Right.
I never read a book.
Wow.
So I read Guns of Navarone at 18. I started becoming a reader. I read The Seawolf. It made me want to read The Call of the Wild and the aforementioned White Fang. I haven't read them yet.
Yeah, don't.
Watch the movie.
Do yourself a favor. You'll never read again. That'll be it.
That's not true.
I used to love to read. Then I read Call of the Wild.
But, let me just tell you, that other one that I was talking about was...
Which one?
The Seawolf was very good.
Great.
But a kid who falls off the Golden Gate Bridge or something, falls into San Francisco Bay, and a ship heading out into the Pacific picks him up, and so he's stuck on the boat. They're like, well, you're stuck with us. So the ship heads out to the Pacific and the Orient, and he's stuck on the boat, and it's all about the adventure.
What do they do to
him? And the captain is very mean, and it's very good.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like not going to be on my top 10 list.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound...
I'm excited for this list, though, Bernie.
Yeah.
Good. I got some really good ones, Matt. Really
when is
good.
It coming out? When is the Bernie list coming out?
I could do it this week if need be.
How about by August 1st? Give me the whole month
That's
of
doable.
August.
Yeah.
By August 1st.
I don't even need... We'll do it one of these days. Yeah.
You got to build it up. You got to build up the excitement. People are going to go... You're going to see lines on 3rd Avenue, Barnes & Noble, miles long the Bernie McGurk
reading
list. How
about Thursday?
Thursday's a perfect day.
This coming Thursday.
I like it.
Now, here. But we don't have to read the books, right? We don't.
Download the WABC radio app right now. Get Bernie and Sid in your ears this morning. 77 WABC.